the local,
the loudmouth,
and the young guy.
Good afternoon, you're in the huddle.
There's something for everybody in the huddle, each weekday from 3 to 6.
How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
On 101.3 The Game.
That's my voice, huh?
That's pretty good.
I like that. That's
so
very
I'm the local.
Good. I didn't know which one you were. I couldn't figure that out.
I am a Flatlander, so I'm honored to be called local.
By the way, we're not very creative. I got to tell you.
In terms of what?
In terms of our punishment for our fantasy football.
We didn't have a punishment.
I got to roll 5,000 meters.
That's not fantasy football. That's gambling.
That's gambling. Yeah, but you know, we do the fantasy football. You come up with a better, you know how people come up with great punishments?
Yes.
And we were trying to come up with a good punishment. We didn't come up with 5,000 meters was not a fun one. Listen to what this one
At least get the facts straight.
I know fantasy football, gambling, whatever
it is. People do fantasy football punishments. Last place has to get a tattoo. Last place has to do this, that.
Well, we did kind of the same thing. Last place had to do something. Listen to what this guy had to do. He finished in last place, so he had to sit in the Waffle House for 24 hours.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute.
That's bad enough.
He can get out early for every one waffle he ate. He got 1 hour subtracted from his time.
Okay.
That's not so hard.
Wait a minute.
I could probably eat 12 waffles.
One more caveat. You have to eat it dry. There's no butter, and you can have a little bit of syrup on the side of the plate, on the other plate, a little bit, for all 12 waffles, just for dipping. That's it. Just a little bit. Just a little, like a thimble size.
I feel like, and believe me, I've been to the Waffle House on the road, and it's quite an experience. I would say I could probably eat 15 of them, and that would solve a lot of the problem.
Do I get water at least? Because I don't need syrup.
Right. You can have water, but you do need syrup. You'll choke yourself down. Like this, the guy documented his time. He goes, I gave myself an hour to settle in. He got into the thing. He goes, I'm working up an appetite. I just placed an order for 6 waffles. And then he put the picture. He goes, let's get at it. It took him a while to down the 6. He goes, oh, my God, I'm going to die. 1 hour, 5 waffles down, 18 hours left on the clock. He goes, is this what blood clots feel like? Asking for a friend. And this guy was, he goes, I'm going through cold sweats now. And he was getting sick.
He's clearly hamming it up for social media.
Well, I'm sure
he doesn't sound that hard. It's pretty tasty.
You've only eaten 5 waffles in 90 minutes, some guy said. He goes, you want to give it a try? He was really trying. He goes, I'm not in a good place right now. And then he started ordering more. But he couldn't do it. It took him almost the whole, 18 hours. It took him so long to eat the damn waffles. It was killing him, man.
I don't know. If you could knock off 5 hours of 24 hours at a Waffle House simply by eating 5 waffles, I feel like I could do that almost twice.
It says here it took him an hour and 45 minutes to eat 6 waffles. It's taken me 2 hours to eat one more.
Really?
So he hit that wall, and he just couldn't do it. That's tough to eat it dry. That's tough. I got to have globs of butter and syrup and all that stuff.
See, I think a waffle is fairly... I don't know how big these waffles are,
at least, there's a picture.
Just rip apart the waffle, eat it piece by piece, have the water.
I mean, you've got 24 hours to eat them.
Get a little bit of milk.
But that defeats the purpose. You don't want to stay there the 24 hours.
So you have basically unlimited amounts of time. As you said, just break them off into little pieces.
You could sit there for 24 hours and eat no waffles if you wanted to.
That's true. Right. You could do that, but that's not going to be very comfortable. You know what I mean?
No.
And you'd meet lots of interesting characters. I can tell you there's nothing quite like a Waffle House on the road by an interstate at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I can imagine.
Speaking of interesting characters, did you watch the Jeopardy Greatest of All Time series
last night? That was awesome.
I mean, look, I like Jeopardy, but I don't watch it very often just because it's 7 o'clock. We got sports on. I'm at Orange Theory doing different things. But I've never felt more dumb than in my entire life last night.
Oh, jeez. Those guys were just crushing
it. They're not even human.
The first set, the first single Jeopardy, they didn't miss one question between the three of them. They didn't miss one. And I didn't even understand some of the categories, nevertheless, the answers they were giving.
I thought I got the final Jeopardy one, and when they went to the guy, he had the same answer I did.
Haley's Comet?
Yeah, but it was wrong.
I tried that.
It can't be that easy, is it? I goes, either I'm that smart or everybody's that stupid. Yeah.
I missed it because I was driving Peruvians all over Vermont in the darkness last night for Uber.
Oh, fun.
I have 1 foot in the door at the condo. Done. 9 o'clock. See you later. Get a ping from Walmart to take 4 people from Peru to Stowe. Okay, I'll do that. There's money involved there. And they had 9,000 bags. They bought half the Walmart store in Williston and stuffed it into my car.
That's like you doing your Christmas shopping on December 24th. They were just doing other grocery shopping for the full half year.
I learned a lot about Lima and the Andes.
That's good.
It was. It was fun. I was just half asleep the whole way. Of course, I didn't tell them that.
Yeah, that would be good for your ratings. By the way, you're trying to keep it at 5 stars.
Francis said they got 3 total questions wrong in Jeopardy the whole time.
And I think they were all by Brad, that third guy.
I don't remember him for some reason.
Poor Brad is no shot.
Yeah,
And James, Jeopardy James, I think he would have won, but he didn't hit any daily doubles yesterday.
No,
and that was the problem.
Exactly. He lost by 200 in the... But it was kind of figured out what he was going to. By the way, my co-host, Torres, got into a fight over this with Paulie from the Dan Patrick Show.
Really?
Yes.
Over Jeopardy?
Over Jeopardy.
Why?
Torres wrote on something on social media going, I can't wait for the Jeopardy thing. And Paulie wrote something back like, yeah, what's-his-face is crushing it. And he goes, well, thanks for telling me and ruining it for me. He goes, don't you think you should stay off social media then if you don't want to know who's winning? And they were kind of badly.
Yeah,
back
I don't
and
want
forth.
To know who's winning.
Right. Now, those guys have a rule, and they lose a ton of money, don't they, if they tell how it went? I mean, I know Survivor.
Not people on social media.
He means the contestants.
Yeah.
Survivor used to be that way. I assume all the reality shows that are pre-taped, which is all of them, basically.
Yeah, you know.
You can't say a word, can you?
No, you can't say none of that. Bachelor, any of that stuff. Otherwise, you're in big trouble. Yeah, they need the ratings, that's for sure.
Tom in Jeffersonville goes, spoiler alert. Like, hell, it was yesterday. Who's watching yesterday's Jeopardy today?
Yeah, besides they got today's today.
Yeah, so I'll be watching today's Jeopardy
today, Tom.
As well.
Come on, Tom.
I don't feel like we violated any rules there, Tom.
It was a lot of fun, though. It was fun, and I'm going to watch it again tonight. I'm rooting for Ken because he's a Seahawks fan.
Well, the funny part is I would tell you who won and all that, but I'm really not sure how it works.
Yeah.
I can't figure it out. I can't even tell you who's in the lead right now. Brady, we got a lot to get to. What's coming up
on
the show?
Well, we are on Twitch, and apparently we've been on Twitch at all hours of the night, so we're there, twitch.tv/1013thegame. As for today, we'll get into some really interesting discussions on Tom Brady's future. How about stars who have held on too long? Colin provided some examples, but was he actually right? Buster Olney of ESPN stops in at 5 to talk about the Red Sox. And the Bruins did something really cool last night, aside from just win in Nashville 6-2. But first, we've had 24-plus hours to react to the Giants' hiring of Joe Judge as their head coach. Has anything changed for you, Arnie, in those 24-plus hours as to your feeling on this?
No, I heard Colin changing his mind. He had Peter Schrager on, and he was changing his mind, waffling. Obviously, somebody got to them and said,
waffling.
Hey,
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, back off this guy. We need you to be nice for whatever reason. No, I haven't changed anything. I still say it's not a starter job. I would have liked somebody with a little bit more cachet. I don't think they really got the guy that they wanted, so they had to settle for somebody else. Whenever you have to do that, maybe that's a position where it's not going to work. I don't know. Sometimes it does work out. Sometimes when somebody says no and the next guy says no, it works out for the third guy. I'll tell you what I am positive about. I'm not excited about it. I can't. I'm not like, oh, I can't wait. And I know he's not an X's and O's guy, which he better hire real well on the coordinator. They're talking about Jason Garrett and stuff like that. But I know one thing I'm not. I'm still not going, whew, I'm so pumped up. I can't wait for the start of kickoff game one next year. I hope they do well, but I'm just not pumped up about it.
Yeah, that's the same thing I heard pretty much today. It did seem like a lot of backtracking. My point still remains, in my mind, valid of the fact that it's New York, it's the Giants, it's got to be something other than special teams and wide receivers coach of the New England Patriots to run the New York Football Giants. That being said, though, the backtracking seems to be about the fact that, and something you mentioned yesterday, Brady, the fact that he's special teams coordinator, which means he works with everybody.
Yeah.
I heard that a lot today, and I just heard various other things about, you know, good and bad, about how he's getting thrown right off the deep end as far as coaching experience here, and it's going to be tough. If they get off to a lousy start, it's going to get loud in the Meadowlands.
802-655-6672, have you changed your tune at all 24-plus hours later? And I'll say this, not only have I not changed my tune, I feel even better than I did a day ago about this hire. Yesterday, I was all in on the profile of Joe Judge, a Belichick Saban disciple. If he can get the respect of those two, he can certainly get the respect of 53 players in the locker room. I liked that. I liked the idea that he wasn't going to have to work with one side of the ball, that he could get two coordinators. Now, as you learn more about Joe Judge individually, I feel even better than this. Dan Duggan, who covers the Giants for The Athletic, he says, look, I've consistently heard that Judge is, quote, an extremely detail-oriented and intense coach. He has a strong presence and isn't shy about getting on players for mistakes. Okay, isn't that what all Giants fans tell me they love about Tom Coughlin? Hey, we need to get back to old Giants football. We need a guy with the crotchety, fiery personality.
You don't like that type of guy, though, and this guy's going to make
it. But Giants fans have told me all along that that's what they love. Even you have said that.
But you don't like that type of coach, and this guy's going to be making practice. They said he's going to make him practice hard. There'll be some tackling, some hard tackling in practice. He's not a player's coach like Cora is that you brought in. Come here, buddy. Let's take the week off and all relax.
But
he's not going to do that.
But it's slightly different here because Joe Judge is not going to work with one side of the ball. When you are working with one side of the ball and you are constantly grading on everybody, you are wearing them down. You are wearing them thin. Think about the relationship, how quickly it deteriorated between Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield. Okay, as the coordinator, as the assistant, you're the fun uncle who's in charge of teaching, but you're there to be the vent, you know, the go-between between you and the head coach. When you are the head coach and also the coordinator, you are there to absolutely grate on your players. Joe Judge doesn't have to do that. He gets to play bad cop, and all of his coordinators get to play good cop, and that's a difference.
Well, and he's got, I assume he's got some sort of Rolodex, too. I mean, I really have to believe he does, even though he hasn't been very high up. He's been with New England. He's been with Nick Saban. He's been with Bill Belichick, obviously. And what's going to be more important for this guy's progress moving forward than his coordinators on both sides of the ball? I mean, nothing. That is it. If he can find the right guy, and we're already hearing Chad O'Shea as a possible OC, that would be a good hire.
And Joe Cardona, who plays special teams for the Patriots, he joined ESPN last night. And he provided a little more context on Joe Judge.
He prepares harder than anybody I've ever seen, and you know, if he doesn't know something, you can bet he's going to work as hard as he can to figure that out. So for the naysayers and for everybody, obviously, you know, his tenure will be proven out. But, you know, he comes with just a level of diligence that I think is pretty much unmatched in people that I've ever seen. And his ability as a leader, you know, to really go and you know, change and grow to match his players' demeanors. I think it's something that's really impressive.
He talks about, so that's a guy who's played for Joe Judge telling you he's detail-oriented, he's intense, he's hardworking, his work ethic is unrivaled. And he's played for Belichick for a long time, too, and he's saying that this guy's work ethic is unmatched more than anybody he's ever seen. He says he's willing to adapt to his players, but also can command the room. These are all traits that you should be liking if you're a Giants fan.
I do have other questions I'm sure we'll get into later on, like how come Belichick wouldn't let him go before, but now it's okay to go ahead and pump him up and push him and put him in the forefront, okay? You know, that's one question. That
was there interest?
Well, yeah, there was interest. There was interest when he was going to go ahead and go to the Colts. There was interest. Let me tell you something. If there was a lot of interest, remember, the Patriots said to McDaniels, we don't want you taking anybody, right? Well, McDaniels loves this guy. McDaniels would have taken him just about any place he would have gotten the job. But they're like, no. Well, if you love this guy so much, wouldn't you promote him back then? Saying, yeah, go ahead. Here you go. Here's your chance to become a head coach or a coordinator or leave. But they never made him a coordinator. So I'm kind of curious to see how it's, and all of a sudden they're propping him up in front of the media. That kind of bothers me also. Nick Saban and Bill Belichick have an agenda here. I don't know what it is. Maybe they just really, truly want to help the guy out, but there is an agenda here.
There's an agenda needed with special teams coordinators. Look, think about this. I told you yesterday about guys who have been special teams coaches. They didn't get their break right from special teams. And you guys have played right into everyone's hands on this. Oh, you're not a household name. Why? Because you're a special teams coordinator. You only even know who Joe Judge is now because Belichick put the wide receivers coach label on him. Even John Harbaugh, who made most of his career prior to being a head coach as a special teams guy, he didn't get any looks in Baltimore until Andy Reid did what? Made him the defensive backs coach for 1 year. So until they attached him to a position, you didn't know who he was. I think it is Belichick trying to help Joe Judge by saying, look, special teams coordinators get overlooked. Let me give you another title that will put you more in the public limelight.
And our listeners seem to be agreeing. Matt Montpelier says, I've settled down a little with Judge being hired since Belichick was training him in a way, but I still want someone with a higher pedigree for the Giants. At least he's young and can hopefully organize the troops. He said, I do like how he has a strong presence. I like the drill sergeant and want discipline. No boat parties in Florida. Do you agree that in this day and age, a drill sergeant works with these 23 and 24-year-olds?
It depends on the group you have. I don't want to be in the neutral on this one, but I mean, sometimes, look, I always say, let's get the hardcore there and that. But then when we're talking about baseball, you're like, Cora's a, he's a player's guy. You know, he loves the players. That's what they're going to love. Well, it works that, but it doesn't work like that in football, I guess, because we want the drill sergeant in football. But it's different in each sport.
Does Golden Tate want a drill sergeant for a coach?
Look, different. I think it's different. Look, Arnie, these are valid points you're making. And I have said all along, I do like the idea of somebody who's more able to talk with you rather than just talks down at you. I like this hire for the Giants because, again, when you say the words detail-oriented, what have we lacked with the Giants the last couple of years? Attention to details. Now, they weren't a heavily penalized team under Pat Shurmur, but clock management, timeout situations, all of those things were not great. So if he gets coordinators with prior head coaching experience, that helps him get better. They can help him relate to the team or adapt to certain situations. Baseball is a little bit different because it's a six-month grind with somebody. It's 162 games plus 30 in spring training plus another 20 in the playoffs. It's 200 days with somebody. You can't have Billy Martin in baseball. Now, and I agree, I don't love the drill sergeant mentality in football anymore either, but at least if he's not working with one specific side of the ball, he's not going to have as much of an opportunity to great. He can be an overseer and allow his coordinators to do a lot of the work day-to-day with the players.
Yeah, but then you're saying if you're a good coordinator one way or the other, then you're not going to be a good head coach because you don't have to hire one of them. If you're a great offensive coordinator and you make yourself the offensive coordinator, does that mean you're not going to be a good coach? No, and vice versa with the defensive coordinator.
It's hard to do both, Arnie, and you can admit this, and I think you've seen this probably in places you've been in your career. How often do big market radio stations have their program director also be a host on the air? They may be a great host, but it's too hard to do both well. It's too hard to dedicate yourself to doing one show while overseeing the rest of the radio station. Most places don't do that.
I think it's hard to be a GM and a coach. That I'll give you. You know, some people try to pull that off, but that's tough. I think it's tough to be an owner and a GM like Jerry Jones is doing. And not a very good job at that.
No, he isn't.
I'm not so sure it's that tough to be, an offensive coordinator and a head coach, especially if you have the defensive coordinator hired. You're really just taking the play calling there. You're just calling the plays. Some coaches like to call the plays, though. I mean, that's...
Yeah, some do, and some are good at it, okay? Yeah. McVay, good. Kyle Shanahan, good. Ben McAdoo, Pat Shurmur, the Giants have done that. It didn't work. Freddie Kitchens just got fired. It didn't work.
Oh, he's a knucklehead.
Tony Dungy told us on this station, he said, it's very, very difficult. Okay, I wanted originally to be the defensive coordinator also. I had to give that up because too many other things were falling by the wayside. And that Tony Dungy's a Hall of Famer who said it's too difficult to do that.
802-655-6672. Are you happier today that the Giants have hired this, or are you still kind of bummed? I'm still bummed out. Like I said, it's still not the big splash that I want. I'm ready to play football, though. Obviously, you got to give the guy a chance, but I'm still not happy. And I'm not happy about Daniel Jones, but that's a whole other story.
And Mike Golic on ESPN this morning had this to say that should also make Giant fans feel better.
The special team coordinator has to deal with more people than the O coordinator and D coordinator have to deal with. They have to deal with offensive people, defensive people, and way more. The only person that deals with more is the head coach. From the responsibilities of kickoff return, punt return, field goal block, and field goal kicking team. That's what he has to coordinate and the players that he's dealing with. So he is dealing with a lot.
Yeah, and that's something you said yesterday, yeah. Brady. I mean, he's dealing with a lot. And the other thing, and for what it's worth, look, this is not going to mean you're going to be a successful winning head coach for the New York Giants, but his special team units ranked top 10 each of the last five seasons as the Patriots coordinator. So, I mean, it's not like, and you saw that, not that the turnover rate necessarily mattered, but a lot of those turnovers were on special teams this year for New England.
I think there's a certain type of coach that's more successful over others. I'm just telling you the type of coach I like. I know Pete Carroll's not a drill sergeant.
Nope.
That guy will give you a week off at the drop of a hat. And he doesn't care. And I don't even know if he does anything other. I've said this before. I think he just roots and doesn't do anything on the sideline. Obviously, he's doing something. Doesn't look like he's doing much. And the players just love this guy.
Well, he's got two coordinators as well.
Right, he does. But he has two coordinators.
He's got two coordinators that do work on their own side of the ball. I like the prototype of Joe Judge or the profile of Joe Judge. And I like that he's a leader of men, that players have respected him, that his former players are coming out speaking on his behalf. You're going to have to see who his coordinators are before you judge this. Because you know what, Arnie? I think you'd be doing backflips if you found out next week that Wade Phillips all of a sudden was the defensive coordinator of the New York Giants.
I'd be happy about that, but that still would change my mind about Judge. I would still say he's not a big enough splash, but I could be wrong about that. But I do
it
like,
on the offense. Maybe. I mean, that's a splash.
I wouldn't have a problem with that either. He called his own plays in Dallas.
If you're going to have a guy nobody's ever heard of as the head coach, if you could get Wade Phillips and Jason Garrett on both sides of the ball, you're doing something there.
And Arnie, you know this from college especially. Take out the turmoil at the end of his career. But, I mean, what was Joe Paterno doing at the end of his career? What was Bobby Bowden doing at the end of their careers in college? Those guys are delegating to their staff, and they're trusting their staff to do things. Now, Joe Paterno, Bobby Bowden, big names, but they weren't doing anything more than being a figurehead for the university and a recruiting figure and someone that the players would respect, at the time before the Paterno controversy.
Well, they were too old.
If Joe Judge can put people in place to do a great job for him, and he can just be the overarching figure that players respect. Again, there's a reason why in baseball it's called a manager. We're not asking the manager to also be the hitting coach or also be the pitching coach. A manager is somebody who is able to delegate, and Joe Judge right now, if he gets a good staff, will have proven that to be a good trait of his.
Well, we'll get into this later on since you brought it up, but you know, you bring up the Bowdens of the world, the Paternos of the world that were getting old that really didn't do much because of their age. Well, Belichick's about 67. How old were those guys? Were 68, 69, 70? You know?
And Belichick, I think Joe Paterno was well into his 80s, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, Belichick doesn't seem to be like he's slowing down at all. I don't know. It seems like he's got the same amount of energy he's always have. I don't know when that guy's
getting even more codgy as he gets older, which is almost hard to believe.
I don't know if that guy's ever going to slow down. 802-655-6672 if you want to go ahead and jump on in. All right, Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Colin Cowherd says now would be the perfect time for Tom Brady to retire. Do we agree with what he has to say?
All right, that's next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 the game.
Brady.
We all hung out Friday, sans Arnie.
Arnie.
What's sans Arnie?
Rich.
I learned that in fourth grade.
What? It's the huddle.
I didn't know what that meant. Why did you call me up?
On 101.3, the game.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle. 101.3 the game. Busy Wednesday. So much going on out there. Brady, get to the mistake of the day.
Mistake of the day. 802-655-6672. Thanks to Embroidery Works, Joanne's Uniforms, located conveniently for you on Heineberg Drive in Colchester. Your one-stop shop for corporate apparel and corporate gifts. And they also do lettering for your truck and trailer. Competitive pricing, super fast turnaround. I know I used them well over the holiday seasons. Got my stuff back in 2 days, I think it was.
Wow.
So, and part-time Nick was in here wearing his sweatshirt yesterday, so I know at least he hasn't ruined it yet.
Yes.
So I'm glad my gift has not gone to waste.
I'm sure he'll ruin it soon. By the way, Derek and St. Albans, you're excited about two old coordinators who just got fired. Yes, I am.
Correct.
Thank you very much. I am about that one, so you can make fun of that. Isaac said Pete Carroll is one of the best defensive coaches in football. He's not just a cheerleader.
Do you agree with that?
Certainly looks like a cheerleader out there.
I agree he is great at motivating his players, rooting on his players. I do believe he's also great defensively, yes.
He does a lot of rooting.
I think he brings a lot of that opinion upon himself. I mean, he's constantly running up and down the sidelines. Yeah. He just looks like a rah-rah guy to the naked eye.
He doesn't know where to stand, that's why.
He's allowed to bring positivity, Arnie. Not everyone has to be down at the dumps like you.
Wow. All right, what did Colin say about Tom Brady?
Colin says it's a perfect time for Brady to step aside, not just from the Patriots, but from football in general. Huh?
Let me just say this. Even for superstar athletes, it almost always ends choppy. Michael Jordan to the Wizards, Patrick Ewing to the Sonics and Orlando Magic, Akeem to the Raptors, Joe Namath ended up out here in Los Angeles, Brett Favre goes to the Jets, had one good year with Minnesota, then a choppy year, Emmett Smith to the Cardinals. Your best, if you got your money, just tie a bow around it. Class, dignity, you know, Derek Jeter did it the right way. John Elway, Super Bowl MVP exits, did it the right way. Tom Brady can end now with 11 straight AFC East titles, 11 straight playoff appearances, and 8 of 9 AFC championships. One team, one coach. I think it's a perfect time for Brady to retire. I'm not predicting he's going to. I just think I like clean endings.
Yeah, he could. I once again disagree with Colin.
I never hear the day, as we often do.
It doesn't have to be a clean ending. Sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes it does. Sometimes you go there and get that 1 year, you get a championship or a World Series or whatever you're looking for. If Tom wants to continue, first of all, it isn't like it was a bad year. He still finished 12-4. They won the division and they went to the playoffs. So, you know, they get by that first game, you know, all of a sudden they're a chance to still go to the AFC championship. No, I'm not saying Tom is in that position right now.
No, and I said 2 years ago, maybe even three on this show, I thought 2019, 2020 was going to be his final year and he was going to step away. But I don't think he wants to go out like this. The problem is he doesn't want to go out with a pick six, sure, and he doesn't want to go out with being mediocre for half of a season. But as you said, Arnie, he was 12-4, got his team to the playoffs, won another AFC East championship. And I really believe if he spends time, you know, if the front office of the New England Patriots spends time in the offseason figuring it all out, they're not that far away. They need about three or four more guys on that offense. They obviously need a tight end. They need a couple of guys on the front lines. I really don't think they're that far away, and I think Tom Brady feels the same way.
I disagree with Colin also because Tom Brady can still play, and the numbers bear that out. Does he look like the Tom Brady from 3 years ago? No, of course not. I understand this year he needed to be a game manager, and I think I'm perfectly fine with him being a game manager next year. But Tom Brady as a, quote, game manager was still better than a lot of quarterbacks that we hold in high regard this year. Tom Brady, among quarterbacks that played eight games or more this year, he was graded 10th by Pro Football Focus. In the top third of the league, okay, he was ranked higher than Dak Prescott, Deshaun Watson, Jimmy Garoppolo. He was ranked higher than all of those quarterbacks. He was ranked 20 spots higher than Daniel Jones was, and I'm talking about how I love Daniel Jones. So Tom Brady can certainly still play. He can certainly still play at a playoff caliber level. I do believe the dynasty is over. I do believe that their ability to consistently be in the market for first round buys is over, but that doesn't mean that the Patriots can't be a team that that can compete for a playoff spot with Tom Brady. The difference is, and we went through and did the research today on this, Arnie, is that some of the people that Colin listed, they were essentially done, but and then they decided to keep playing. Like he mentions Hakeem Olajuwon. Olajuwon averaged 10.3 and 11.9 points a game his last 2 years with the Rockets. He was already done before he went to Toronto.
And I don't know for this for a fact. I guess we'd have to look up each athlete. But the ones that you go back further, I could certainly see it as a money grab because they weren't making a lot of money
through those years.
I mean, nowadays, do you have to stick around for the extra 20 or 30 million when you've been making 30 million a year for how many years straight? No, you don't have to.
No, but then you have the guys who just want to stay on the same team for their whole career, no matter what. You got a guy like Dan Marino. I remember when everyone said he should retire in 98, he came back at 99, 38 years old, and he was absolutely horrible. He had 12 touchdowns, 17 interceptions.
Bert says, well, what about Ray Bourque? Had he not gone to Colorado, he never would have won a cup.
Right. That's an exception to the rule. That was like a magic carpet ride for Ray Bourque. He goes to one NHL team and they end up winning the Stanley Cup. That worked perfectly. That's an exception, not the rule.
It was Malone and Gary Payton tried to win one with the Lakers.
That
didn't work out.
Steve Nash, another guy at the end of a career, went to the Lakers. It was a disaster.
Yeah, but look, though, it's interesting to hear Colin mention these names because we went back through and did the research on guys that I'm not old enough to have seen. Again, look, Joe Namath, I was under this impression that Joe Namath was great with the Jets and then just all of a sudden awful with the Rams.
No.
His last year with the Jets, 4 touchdowns, 16 interceptions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Massively overrated.
He should have called it quits prior to... Like, it wasn't just, oh, I'm sad to see Joe Namath be bad in his last year with the Rams. He was bad with the Jets before that.
It was his knees. Yeah, terrible knees. He was banged up.
Johnny Unitas was horrible the last 2 years
Chargers,
with the Baltimore. But he was awful with the Baltimore Colts before that for 2 years.
Shaq in a Celtics uniform.
I think a lot had to do with the money.
Yeah, I mean, Shaq in a Celtics uniform. How ridiculous was that? It was fun, but...
And the other thing, too, that Colin says I disagree with, you might not like to see some of these icons play in other uniforms, and I understand that, but you mentioned Brett Favre. He made the Pro Bowl with the Jets and with the Vikings and went to the NFC Championship game.
And that year with the Vikings, statistically, was one of his top three or four of his career. I mean, he was unbelievable.
Like 33 touchdowns and 7 picks or something. Like Brett Favre wasn't done yet. So I understand maybe Green Bay didn't need him anymore because they had Aaron Rodgers, but Brett Favre wasn't done. Even Emmitt Smith. Emmitt Smith was hurt that first year in Arizona, but his last year in Arizona was exactly the same as his last year in Dallas. So Emmitt Smith looks exactly in Arizona like he did that last year in Dallas. So it wasn't like these guys just went to these new cities and fell off a cliff.
Matt Montpelier, there's a small part of me that thinks Brady wants to prove he could do it without Belichick, and Belichick wants to prove that he could do it without Brady. You know, that's a battle of the egos. You're going to go ahead and do that, and I can't believe that that's what's driving this. I got to think cooler heads are going to prevail. They take a step backwards. And, you know, I would think that Tom would get over his ego faster than Belichick get over his ego.
You know, Colin said this, and it was interesting. It kind of goes off the Ray Bourque point, is that he likes a happy ending. He likes a clean ending. And I'm more into the romanticism than anybody in this room, but I think we overstate the value of a happy ending here. I think that we don't necessarily love the happy ending. We love when a guy has a comeback story, okay? We love when a guy has overcome an obstacle. We love when a guy has beaten the odds. I mean, okay, he mentions John Elway. Well, John Elway, why do we love that? Because he'd never won a Super Bowl before. And here he was at the end of his career overcoming all the demons of his years past. Same thing with Peyton Manning. We couldn't beat Brady, so here he does. He beats Brady in 2015 AFC Championship game. Then he goes out and wins the Super Bowl. So we root for the old-timers to look once more like they used to look. Brady hasn't fallen off that cliff to the point where you're like, he's not coming back from anything. So I think if Brady just rode off into the sunset, right, it doesn't stick with the same resonance as Elway or Ray Bourque, who never won. I mean, I think there's difference when you're coming back from right. something.
And he's also, the other thing he has is a potentially really good defense once again as he comes back next year. And look what it did for Peyton Manning, and he left his team. He was terrible that year that Denver won the Super Bowl. It didn't make any difference. The defense was so overwhelming, there was nothing anyone could do about it.
Isn't it funny, the number one guy criticized for retiring is Barry Sanders, and that's because he retired too early.
Yeah.
People, I can't believe he retired so early. I can't believe he retired. And we criticize him more than anybody for retiring early.
You know,
Jim Brown, I believe. Didn't Jim Brown retire after
yeah,
that?
Yeah, wasn't he banged up big time, though?
He also had a career in the movies, too, so I think he wanted to get that going, too.
We also went through and looked at, so Danny and I were doing this earlier. We went through and looked at, okay, how many athletes left the team they'd been for forever and then just cratered. Like, they were pretty good, and then they just cratered. And Brady could run that risk. I don't think that he will, but Babe Ruth was one that was pretty shocking to me. You know, he had 22 home runs his last year with the Yankees, and then he hit 181 playing for
Boston.
Boston
Braves.
He hit 181 with six homers the next year. And Willie Mays,
he's the poster boy of that, what you just said.
But, you know, when he was traded, got not like early season from the Giants to the Mets, he still was an all-star that year where he played with the Mets.
Well, he hit 211 with six homers and 25 RBIs.
That was last year. Yes. But the year before that, he made the all-star game.
But, I mean, it was tough because I remember that. Willie Mays was actually in my lifetime. And, I mean, I remember, I think I was 10 or 11 at the time and thinking, wow, so that's Willie Mays. And he just couldn't do anything. All I remember him is in a Mets uniform.
I was a Mets fan.
Yeah, that's true. You must have seen it.
I knew exactly where he lived. I knew what apartment complex he lived in.
Surprised you didn't stalk him.
I was just a kid, but I'm like, oh, my goodness, man. That's Willie, man. Can you believe that?
No, but you're right. You look at his stats, and it's just it completely went off the cliff with him. And there's only a couple of guys where that was the case. I mean, a guy like Wayne Gretzky never really went terribly off the cliff in his last couple of years with the New York Rangers because he still scored 60, 70 points. Yeah. It wasn't like he scored 11 points in 70 games.
Michael Jordan gets all this grief for his time with the Wizards.
20 points a game.
He averaged 22 the first year, or 23 the first year and 20 the last year. Yeah. I mean, these guys can still play. Look, if the Patriots want to move on, I could absolutely justify that. However, if Tom Brady wants to play, I could absolutely justify that too.
This may be apples and oranges, but do you like listening to your favorite band 30, 40 years later if they were touring and if they were still alive?
That's a loaded question. Of course I would.
But they're not as good, though. They're not.
Right. Look, if Genesis reunited, I wouldn't go to that under any circumstances. No. But 40 Why? Years ago, I would have done anything to have seen them.
Right. But now you don't care to see them? Is that
no.
What,
no. No. Plus, the ticket would be $300.
Well, forget that. Okay. Way to ruin my analogy. There you go. 802-655-6672.
Just saying.
Brady, what do we got coming up next?
They said what? Same as every day at this time.
That's next. You're in the huddle. What about point three of the game?
Whoa. What did he say?
I think Eli is the most disrespected quarterback in the history of the NFL.
He really said that?
Baker's not even a good NFL quarterback yet.
It's they said what?
I just want to watch a game without it being interrupted.
On the Huddle on 101.3 The Game.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the Huddle, 101.3 The Game. So much going on this Wednesday. What were you laughing about?
Oh, just the text line. As soon as we start talking about bands and concerts, it blows up.
I know you would still love to see your old bands.
I would go to see and one guy called, was it Steve? Or what was his name?
Steve in South Burlington.
Steve in South Burlington says, what if it was the original Genesis? And my response to him was, if I would go to Antarctica to see that.
Yeah, yes. See, I said, and even if these guys are old, you would if they were playing it in Burlington, you go, I'm going down there. I'm taking the day off, Brady, and I'm going to go see them. the Flynn, because I can't miss them. Is
right.
What you'd
Look,
be saying.
If Genesis plays the Flynn, first of all, tickets would be over $500 a seat, just to let you know. But yes, I would go to that
of
somehow.
Of course you would.
But you know what I'm turning into, and I think a lot of people in their 50s will agree with this. Brady, this is way out of your thing, but I'm turning into a tribute band addict.
Oh, jeez.
I know, and I feel kind of guilty about it. It's a guilty pleasure. Every time I seem to go to Higher Ground or anywhere for a concert, it seems to be a band playing some other band's music.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, though. It's all right. I mean, if they do it well and, you know, sometimes you get into it, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I just... Nothing says old guy more than that.
That's true. Brady, get to They Said What.
They Said What. How about Colin Cowherd today, noon to 3 before us, was talking with Peter Schrager of Fox Sports.
They Said What?
The two were talking about Josh McDaniels and the interest that McDaniels may have in working with Baker Mayfield in Cleveland.
There was a lot of talk about how much the Patriots brass liked Baker Mayfield, and knowing that Brady's days might be done at some point, do we move up in the draft and try to take a swing at Baker if he slips? He didn't slip. But when you think offense in New England, Josh McDaniels was one of those guys. And if he was interested in Baker Mayfield then, I'm sure he's interested now.
See, that's where I disagree here, where Schrager says, I'm sure he's interested in Mayfield now. I think a lot can change in 2 years. No, I'm not saying that he's not interested in Mayfield, but what you've seen from Mayfield on the field, relationship with his coaches, how he relates to his teammates. He's called out his teammates who are going after different contracts. You're not supposed to speak about that. How does he handle Beckham? How does he handle Jarvis Landry's big personality? What was he saying about Freddie Kitchens on the sideline behind his back? There's some things there of him mic'd up, not saying great things about Kitchens. I think it's possible, or at least plausible, that McDaniels may have loved Mayfield coming out of Oklahoma, may have a different opinion about him now.
Yeah, but does that mean he was wrong? Does that mean we should judge his judgment? We should say, hey, what are you doing out there?
Can you imagine Mayfield and Belichick even in the same locker room?
Oh, God. I mean, there's a lot of guys, could you imagine if somebody said, oh, I'm all into Johnny Manziel? Well, you know, I don't think I want to trust your word anymore. It doesn't mean much to me. McDaniels, I have always said this, he rubs me the wrong way. Maybe that's a me problem, not a him problem. He comes off like he's the smartest guy in the room, arrogant. I don't like what he did with the Indianapolis thing, but so be it. You know, that's water under the bridge right now. There's something about him, and I guess we'll find out soon enough, something about him that I just don't like. Can't put my finger on. I don't know how successful he's going to be.
I think that Baker Mayfield and Josh McDaniels is a powder keg waiting to explode. Because, and I've got this kind of roller coaster of emotions on Mayfield. I hated him coming out of Oklahoma, thought he was arrogant, thought he was smug, thought he was inappropriate, didn't like the police video and all that, grabbing of his, you know, groin, in front, you know, planting the flag, all those things I didn't like. And there was a chance that the Giants could have taken him at number 2. And I remember on this station multiple times saying, I hope the Giants don't take Baker Mayfield. Then I loved him. I liked the swagger. I thought it was good for Cleveland. And then this year, it kind of wears on you that when things aren't going well for him, he's not all that unpleasant of a person to be in the same locker room with. The thing about McDaniels that I've always felt is while I'm sure he's a brilliant offensive mind, and I certainly think that he's a good coach, I don't know that he's a guy that can command the room. I don't know that he's a guy that can, you know, easily work with people. I think Brady is so driven that he works well with McDaniels, but I don't know that Baker Mayfield, who's clearly a different person than Brady, I think McDaniels is expecting that whatever he has with Brady is going to translate everywhere else, and Mayfield's just not that guy.
I think I agree with you on that one. But though Brady and McDaniels got mixed it up on the sideline, and Brady's,
all the time.
And Brady's mixed it up with players, per se, not really mixed up, but yelled at N'Keal Harry. Who else did he yell? He yelled at another
player. Dorsett.
Whatever. He yelled at a couple players. He's yelled at coaches, coordinators. Never yells at Belichick, though, right? Never. Him and Belichick never seem to have any disagreement.
The only guy who's ever yelled at Bill Belichick is Adam Thielen.
Yeah, or his ex-wife. But other than that, there's not a whole lot of yelling with Bill Belichick.
Well, and there's something to be said again for not having your head coach be your offensive coordinator also. So you look at last year, Kitchens. Now, not only was Kitchens a disaster in a lot of other ways, but Kitchens and Mayfield don't get along. Well, that's your head coach not getting along with the quarterback.
Right.
At least if Belichick and Brady don't have a great relationship, he didn't really have to speak to Belichick all that much. They don't have to have all that much to do with each other if they don't want to, because McDaniels and the quarterback's coach can get all the messages delivered to Brady. That wouldn't be the case in Cleveland if McDaniels presumably takes the job and is also in charge of the offense.
Do you think Mayfield ever has a kind of a Ryan Leaf moment and just says, you know what, maybe I'm just being a jerk here. Maybe I need to change my... I mean, does he need a change of scenery? Does he need a change of coach? Does he need a change of attitude?
He needs to mature.
That's the thing. I mean, I saw Ryan Leaf the other day doing it on ESPN, and I mean, he's a friend of the show, and we've seen what incredible leaps and bounds he's grown by since his disastrous football career. But you just wonder if a guy like Mayfield just says, all right, it's been, what, 3 years now?
This will be his third year.
And go, maybe it's me. You know, maybe it's me.
Maybe, so let me just get this right. Maybe everything I've been doing, all the cockiness,
right,
all the stuff that is...
Right, like Ryan Leaf. That's why I brought him up.
Yeah, but Ryan Leaf took a...
Yeah, that was a whole different
thing. Well, no, I mean, he was massively into drugs and everything else.
So let me just get this right. We're going to say, take everything that made you one of the best high school players in the country. Take something that got you, a Heisman, made you the number one pick overall, and throw that out the window. And don't have that attitude anymore. Now you're going to see how tough that is, because it's worked for him every place he's gone, and he became the number one pick in football. And now you're going to tell me, stop doing that, because it really doesn't work. I became the number one pick in football, Rich.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the kid who comes to the Vermont Lake Monsters after hitting 600 through his entire high school and college career, and he's hitting 140 on July 4th. You've got to accept some possibility that you're not bulletproof, and maybe you do need to make changes because you've hit the big time.
I don't think this is about Mayfield's play, though. This is more so about Mayfield's personality. And I think the right kind of coach can certainly work with Baker Mayfield. I don't think Baker Mayfield, after 2 years, is a lost cause.
No, I don't think so either.
But I think that he's going to take a different kind of head coach. I think he needs more of a nurturing head coach, more of a put my arm around you and coddle you. I don't think that's McDaniels. I've never gotten the impression.
Oh, so Judge wouldn't be a good coach for him, huh?
No, I don't think. Well, again, I'm talking about as a guy who's running the offense. I don't think that Josh McDaniels
is running.
Like, I could see Sean McVay, who's charismatic, I think listens, is understanding. I could see him working with Josh McDaniels, but I don't see, you know, I don't see the John Grudens, the stodgy guys with not a lot of personality, working with Mayfield, and I think that's who McDaniels is.
Isaac said Arnie Baker walked on at Texas Tech, one of the best. He walked on. He also walked on at Oklahoma, too, and that's because they said they didn't have a scholarship for him, and then once he got on, he became a scholarship player, but he was certainly one of the best players, and that's how you win a Heisman. You don't just come from nowhere. That was a whole crazy story about Baker Mayfield. About walking on and stuff like that. So that's why I give him work. That's another thing. You know, we walked on two places and became a big star, and now we want to say, stop being who you are. 802-655-6672, hour one in the books. Brady will tell you what's trending. We'll get you ready for the top four at four. All that's coming. I have your computer because everything that you put on Facebook is coming up on my computer.
Yes.
So when you say, I love you too, Schmooky, and all that.
Nope.
Okay, so I can see all that. I don't need to see that.
Rich.
Wah, 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 wah.
Brady.
Rich doesn't understand email. He's still on tablet carving.
It's The Huddle.
Woohoo!
On 101.3 The Game.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle. 101.3 The Game. Beautiful Wednesday out there. Well, not so beautiful. It's a little snowy and
slick.
It was snowing today?
Yeah, it was snowing on my way in.
Pretty much for 2.5 months.
On and off.
On and off, yes.
It's supposed to be my mom told me it's supposed to be 58 in Albany this week.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, for Saturday at least. It's supposed to rain and be in the 50s here.
Oh,
crazy.
I know.
It's just going to be sloppy and gross.
Nice ski weather.
Mudslide season starting early, I see.
They're talking about the high tomorrow of like 12 and the high on Saturday of 55.
Unbelievable.
So, welcome to the roller coaster.
Remember I told you yesterday that the Lake Monsters were looking for summer interns?
Yes.
Because I'm looking for an intern for my son. We're going through because I don't want him to work in a law office.
I don't want him to. How about what he wants?
He doesn't want to work in a law office. Smith and Smith. Yes, Shane, give me my turkey sandwich with no tomatoes.
So you'd rather have him running around in a mustard costume? Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I thought driving the Oscar Mayer Mobile this Sunday, this summer would have been fantastic.
Well, that. I'm talking about on the field.
ESPN was looking for some interns.
Really?
Down there in the summer?
Maybe I'll do that.
Did I bring that up yesterday, the Oscar Mayer Mobile? I think that's funny.
Yes, you did.
I think that's great. Or Wipeout. I wanted him to do the show Wipeout in Los Angeles and be an intern on that. Or the Price is Right was looking for summer interns.
How about what Shay wants? What does he want to do?
But if he was
you
on
don't
the
even know, do you?
If he was on the Price is Right, he can get us in. Get us, you know. Get,
oh, that's important.
That is important. Yeah. That'd be really important. Those he, I would be an. I would want to be an intern for the Price is Right.
What does he want to do?
I don't. He has no idea.
Well, you think he has no idea.
He just wants to do something. If it was up to him, he would just do something hockey.
Well,
and that's
okay.
It. He would do something. He would like, oh, intern for like the Bruins or something. But
oh, that sounds real.
Yeah, that sounds terrible out there. We'd have to.
By the way,
to
was that the game of the year in Nashville
last
night?
Oh, jeez, how about
I was
that
loving
one?
It. Every time I had the game on, score. Another
I didn't know
one.
How many. I thought they had 16 goals yesterday.
I liked the cool behind the scenes stuff I was reading today in the Athletic about the Bruins had all of their team mom, like every mom on the team went out. They flew on the team plane. They were out there sitting in the same section. They all wore their son's jerseys. They were hanging out in the locker room. They went out to a team dinner with all their moms. It was pretty cool. And for Bruce Cassidy, who lost his mom, he lost his dad while he was playing and his mom 8 years later, he said, look, I wish I had had this opportunity when I was playing to have my parents around more. I thought it was a really cool idea.
Yeah, it was cool. On a Tuesday night in Nashville, too. That's a good place to bring them. They can go raise hell. So that's a hell raising town.
That would be me 4 years from now.
Oh, you're going to start becoming a hellraiser at 60?
No, I'll go when my kid makes the NHL. I'll go have dinner with him or something
Yeah,
like
but
that.
If you don't want him playing hockey this summer, and you
I don't
want
know.
Him,
I just
you want him doing the Price is Right. How is he going to become a star?
We have a lot of interns. By the way, did you know Roger Goodell was an intern?
He still
shocked me.
Yeah, he was an intern in the NFL office. And worked his way up and obviously became commissioner. Seriously, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I believe you. Yeah. That doesn't shock me in the slightest.
I mean, that's kind of a climb, though, from an intern in the NFL office to commissioner.
Well, how old is Roger Goodell now?
I was going to say 58, but I'm not sure.
Okay, so he's
looks,
an intern.
He looks younger than
so he's an intern at 20? You're telling me it was a 30-year clock?
Yeah, but
yeah
still,
that doesn't shock me.
But still, you know, even to you know, sometimes even when you're an intern, you don't even go into that field. You go into something else. But he just stayed in the NFL and just worked his way up, man. Good
so,
for him.
So what would Shay do when the Price is Right? Just give me an idea of what that kind of internship involves.
He wouldn't be able to be on the show, but they have male models now. No, I'm not kidding. They have male models.
Do they really?
Yes. And one of them looked just like Shay. I'm like, that's what we just started the whole conversation.
Maybe.
They have like one male model and one female model now, or two female. That's it. The whole Janice and, you know, Barker's Beauties.
Right.
That is so politically incorrect now. It's not even funny. That's gone. You
Maybe
know?
He could turn over the letters on Wheel of Fortune,
yes,
like Vanna White's daughter, who's doing that now.
Oh, is she?
Is she?
Or is it just Vanna, who still looks like she's 25?
No, Vanna is going to be doing some of the hosting for Pat Sajak, and Vanna White's daughter is going to be turning over the letters.
Oh, get out of here.
She's already been doing that.
I didn't see it. I missed it. Is she cute? Does she look like Vanna?
She looks like Vanna.
Yeah, I wonder if she's cute. She's Vanna White's daughter.
Oh, how great is she that?
You can tell that they're related, yes.
Yeah. Bob in Moncton says, how about interning at the Playboy Mansion? Is that something you'd approve of?
I'm not sure.
Wow.
I want him to have fun, but I don't know if I want him to have that much fun.
Now that Hugh Hefner is dead, does the mansion still exist?
Oh, no. I assume it's still there.
You tell us,
Arnie. You know.
I think the whole thing was sold, but he was allowed to live in the mansion until his death. Is he dead?
Yes.
Yeah. Hugh Hefner is dead.
Yeah. So I think
he's still dead.
I think everything is gone. I'm not sure, but I think it's all gone. His daughter was running the magazine for a while, but I don't know what happened.
Who
to
is
that.
The guy who ran the legal brothels out in Vegas?
The guy?
Yeah, come on.
Is it somebody famous?
He's got the Dude Ranch or whatever.
Is it somebody famous?
Yes, it's somebody famous.
I don't know.
The text line will know. 802-655-666.
Oh, by the way, you're wrong. It's Pat Sajak's daughter, not Vanna's.
Someone I thought it was Vanna White's daughter.
Text line's blowing up.
It's blowing up. It's Pat Sajak's daughter.
Look at all these texts.
Yeah, there's four of them from that. You see, that just it goes to show you, you know what I mean?
We could sit here and discuss Tom Brady's future for 3 hours.
I wonder how she got the job, Pat Sajak's daughter. Come on now.
So are you going to start calling Drew Carey and just drive him nuts with daily phone
calls?
No,
I don't know, but if I knew somebody, see, but wouldn't that be a lot Wouldn't that be more fun than just sitting in an office and getting me a turkey sandwich with no tomatoes on it? I mean, come on now. Have some fun. You're young. Go enjoy something. Go, you know, it wasn't like when we were being interns and we make you do all the grunt work. Go pick up my dry cleaning. Oh, go make beds for me. You know, stuff like that. That's what we use them for.
Dennis Hoff.
Yes.
That's the guy I was thinking about.
Chris said, come on, guys. Dennis Hoff.
Oh, you've never heard of Dennis
Hoff? I've never heard of him either.
He's got the Bunny Ranch. It's like he's the owner of seven legal brothels in Nevada. He's dead now. But
don't know him.
Interesting story on Dennis Hoff. So for some reason, I don't know why, my old boss in Albany, who you know from Dallas.
Uh-huh.
He had a relationship with Dennis Hoff.
Oh, how funny.
That's a good guy to know.
And they had him on the air. This was before I was a host. They had him on the air. I don't remember if they met him at a Super Bowl or something like that. Dennis Hoff sent a package to my station in Albany. And it was like Bunny Ranch t-shirts and sex toys and all this. It was ridiculous. So like you open up the box and there's this sex toy and that and this lotion and this t-shirt. I had a Dennis Hoff Ranch shirt at one point.
Oh, there he is. Born in Phoenix, 1946. An American brothel owner, TV personality, and political candidate.
How funny.
What a perfect trio.
Dougie said Arnie Shake could work at Buffalo Wild Wings with the hockey players and do that. Yeah, you could do that also. He has a lot of options. I don't know. I want to send him someplace fun and someplace he can enjoy himself and, you know, do whatever he wants to do. But
He could take over for Dennis Hoff.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Dennis Hoff, the author of the book No Business Like Ho Business. I'm telling you, it says it.
Oh my goodness. That was probably included in the box of stuff that he sent my station in Albany.
I remember
that day that Dennis Hoff stuff got sent to us. I just couldn't believe. Because I didn't know who Dennis Hoff was at the time.
And he died in his Dennis Hoff's Love Ranch. Domestic partner, Heidi Fleiss. That's the name I remember.
Okay, I think it came.
I think it came with like handcuffs with like the leprous.
Oh, jeez.
I'm pretty sure like something like that was in the box.
His other classic book is The Art of the Pimp, One Man's Search for Love, Sex, and Money.
Sounds like a bestseller.
Do intern at Disney. I don't know if that'd be very fun if you have to wear like one of those costumes.
It's 110 degrees.
Yeah, and you're suffering.
Be inside the Mickey costume.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to continue. You know, it's surprising if you just Google internships and what category you're looking for, 10 million come up.
Why does he work here?
Yeah, well, I think he wants to get out of Burlington a little bit and enjoy something on hockey. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'll keep you updated. Brady, let's get right at it. Hour two.
The Huddle has 3 hours of show to cover everything. Every day.
Four.
So you don't miss any.
Three.
It's the top four at four.
Two. One.
On 101.3, The Game.
And remember, top four at four, thanks to Grazer's Restaurant, Maple Tree Place, Williston, Main Street, St. Albans as well. Online ordering available, grazersvt.com. And Agave Taco Tequila Casa, also Maple Tree Place. It's $5 Margarita Wednesday, and they do serve brunch on Sundays. You can order online, agavevt.com. Now,
number four.
This is interesting to me, an Aaron Hernandez three-part documentary series, and Rich, you love documentaries.
Yes, I do.
Is going to premiere next Wednesday night on Netflix, so you have to have Netflix to be able to watch it, of which I got rid of Netflix. And I'll steal your info.
I think I do.
I'll ask you for your info.
Okay. Oh, can we get it for free if we
cheat? I guess, I think so.
Yes, but don't tell them.
All right, Arnie.
So, the three-part documentary series is called Killer Inside, The Mind of Aaron Hernandez. The trailer is online at 1013thegame.com. It actually looks very, very intriguing.
Yes, it does.
I guess my first question was, are people still interested in Aaron Hernandez? Okay, he was convicted of murder. We think maybe he was part of another double murder, although he wasn't convicted of that because he committed suicide before that ruling came down. Are people still interested on Hernandez?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that story disappeared quickly. The whole Aaron Hernandez thing went away fast.
Extremely dark and sad.
Yeah.
And I think people wanted to move on from that. And you notice we didn't get a lot of people criticizing the Patriots or the NFL and they should have done this. It was just like, let's wrap this up and, you know, move on from it. Because it was dark. It was depressing. And, you know, because of those reasons, I'm not so sure I want to see it. Of course, I'm going to have to watch it because of, you know, the whole sports radio thing. But, you know, if I was just a regular guy liking sports, I'm not so sure I want to carve a day out of my day to watch this.
Right, and the thing was, you're right, Arnie, it was such a dark, depressing story, but I remember when it broke, when it was like, oh my gosh, Aaron Hernandez shot somebody dead, really? That was a big deal. I remember on this show, it was a huge deal, but when he committed suicide, it was just like an afterthought. Which is really sad when you think about it.
It was an afterthought because he was life in prison.
Yeah.
That was the reason. Whether dead or alive, officially, we considered him dead to us because he was in prison.
Well, we'll see what this documentary has. The Boston Globe did a 6-parter, a digital feature story series and a podcast last year. And CBS has done something. The New York Times did something. So I have no idea if they're going to be able to unearth anything new. But I'll watch it.
If he was still alive, I'd be all into watching this and finding out what was making him tick and the thinking process and all that, and having him answer stuff on camera. But the way it turned out now, I'm like, you know, I'm ready to move on. And there's a lot of people, not a lot, there's some ex, what was the ex-NFL guy that tried to kill his ex-wife?
Ray Carruth.
Ray Carruth.
Oh, Andre Rison.
No, Ray Carruth.
Well, Ray Carruth for sure.
Because yeah, Andre Rison has his own show, doesn't he? I saw something about Andre Rison.
It was Ray Carruth is the one I'm thinking about. Yeah. And he was getting out of jail after how many years in prison. So, yeah, if they wanted to do something like this, I could see him do, like, all the former guys that have ended up in prison that were athletes. I could see something like that.
You know, I am interested in this. I'm interested in it, yes, you're right, because of the sports radio part and because he played for the Patriots and all that. But, look, we as a society, we love mysteries, okay? We love stories like this, okay? There's a reason why books that people read, mysteries are bestsellers. There's a reason why Dateline is a popular show that's on at all hours of the day. We love learning what motivates people and what sends people over the edge. And this has some stuff that I don't at least know at the ready in my mind about Aaron Hernandez, his relationship with his father. It's got never before heard phone calls from him from prison talking to his mother, blames her for screwing him up, basically, and making him this way. Talks about, you've got footage from people on the stand. There's some footage of Gronk on this talking to the media. There's footage from Urban Meyer. So there's things that I haven't seen. The trailer actually looks really compelling, and I am interested in watching. And Shane brings up a good point on the text line. The NFL probably doesn't want to see this documentary because the CTE argument kind of changes the narrative about Aaron Hernandez. He's almost become... They said that the CTE he had for a 27-year-old was like the most severe case of any 27-year-old they've ever seen. Basically, his brain looked like someone who was in their 70s or 80s. It was that far gone. Wow. And it's hard to call Aaron Hernandez a sympathetic figure. But when you hear that,
right,
he has become a more sympathetic figure.
And in the story, too, in the documentary, he says, "I had nobody," he said to his mother on the phone. "What do you think I was going to do, become a perfect angel?" I cringe at that. You've got to be – it's all about personal responsibility. And I can't stand it. First of all, when TV glorifies really awful people, but it does make you wonder. He had it. He had so much to live for. And that's why someone like the three of us have no idea what could probably possibly trip in a guy's brain like that to just throw it all away, knowing he was throwing it away.
Adam says, unfortunately, if it bleeds, it leads in our society. People will definitely tune in to Netflix for this one.
I'm excited to watch it. Yes, I am excited to watch it.
A morbid national appetite, as they call it.
Well, next Wednesday, that's the premiere. And I don't know exactly how they're doing it. I don't know yet if they are releasing all three parts at once or if they're doing one part on the 15th and then the second and third parts on different days. But I'll be interested in finding out on the 15th for sure.
Yeah, it's probably going to be sort of like the O.J. Simpson offerings that it's got huge ratings. I mean, I think this is just the beginning of this kind of stuff. For whatever reason, we glorify bad people.
Top 4-4, 101.3 The Game.
Number 3.
UVM men's basketball opens up conference play tonight against Stony Brook. Catamounts come in at 10-5, and they come in well-rested. Stony Brook had to open up America East play over the weekend. They did so by beating Maine in a 21-point decision. Seawolves are 10-6, 1-0 in league play. And look, these are 1-2 in the America East as far as preseason rankings go. This is going to be a good game and a good early season league test for UVM.
I thought this was going to be a tough game until I looked up the line and they had Vermont favored by 9.
Seems really high.
You guys are like 3-4 maybe. I'm like, okay, well, it's 9. They think that Vermont's going to go and boat race them. They've got a good offense. They rebound well. They shoot well. I kind of thought that this was going to be one of those grinded-out type games. I could be wrong on that one.
Yeah, though. And I know Maine's terrible, but Stony Brook went over to Orono the other day on Sunday and won by 21 points. This is a team that's been through its ups and downs the last few years. Of course, they peaked a couple of years ago, went down a little bit, and now it looks like they're starting to head their way back up. UVM starting at home against Stony Brook, then they have to drive all the way to Baltimore to play UMBC to open their conference schedule. That is, if they can come out of this thing 2-0 by the end of the weekend, that would be quite an accomplishment.
Artie, you mentioned Stony Brook and how good they are. They're top 15 nationally in total rebounds, three-pointers made, and blocks. So they have the ability to play on the perimeter and play on the interior. And Ben Shungu's going to suit up for UVM in this game, but we don't know how much he's going to play. He's still got that lingering hamstring issue. They say that it's going to be limited minutes for him tonight. He'll be on a pitch count. UVM needs him moving forward. Now, early in the conference season, could they get by with him playing 9, 12 minutes, whatever it is? Yes, but Stony Brook is a good team. It's a big test, and it's a hard test for the opener. And the Cats have won, like, 7 openers in a row and 17 of their last 19 league openers.
Will there be a good crowd there tonight on a Wednesday?
Packed. Absolutely
packed. You said the students weren't.
No, but I bet I wouldn't be surprised if it's 32-88. I think that's full. I wouldn't be surprised. Just the fact that it's Stony Brook.
Students aren't here, but
okay. No, but it's Stony Brook. Okay. It's home. It's not. We don't have a foot of snow falling. I wouldn't be surprised if they get 32.
I think it'll be a full crowd.
Full crowd.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very good crowd. We'll have it for you at 6:30 with the pregame show. Top 4 at 4, 101.3 The Game.
Number 2.
We're 2 days in now to the Red Sox cheating scandal story from 2018. We're going to speak with Buster Olney of ESPN at 5 o'clock, but we're all trying to process the information at hand of what we know about the Red Sox, and people are under the impression that Alex Cora could certainly receive a punishment that differentiates himself from just what the Red Sox are going to get as an organization.
You have to wonder how much he thought this was a benefit for them. Because, like, Rich, you're not going to cheat on your taxes if you think you can make yourself an extra $100. But you may cheat on your taxes if you think you're going to make yourself an extra $20,000.
I have no comment.
I don't condone it, but I can understand why you did it, right? I don't think Cora's doing something like this, cheating, because it was going to, you know, they can get an extra run or two in a 10-0 game. It must have really been beneficial for them to do something like this. That's why I got to come down hard
on
him.
Yeah, but if I cheated on my taxes the year before and they knew it, and then they called me up from the IRS and said, we're keeping an eye on you this year, you better believe I wouldn't do anything fishy. And that's basically what's happened with Alex Cora.
They'll audit you again the next year. They'll do that every year.
Lou Merlone of WEEI, he was speaking yesterday about this.
People are tired of it. It's gone too far. You know, analytics trying to find an edge, whether it's, you know, all the technology that's in there right now. People are constantly looking for edges, and this is what you've come to. You know, whether it is trying to get it in-game now rather than doing a post-game to use it for next game. And I just think people are talking because they had enough with it. Like, let's go out there and just pitch. I'm trying to get your ass out. It hurts when you know I'm throwing a freaking changeup.
Good old Lou.
It is interesting, though, what he says, because we all have access to the game broadcast. You could very easily, the Red Sox could play the Yankees on a Friday night and then go back and watch the game right after, zoomed in on the catcher, and get the sequence for the next night. So you can use technology to get an idea of what they're doing, and now you're putting the onus on the Yankees to change it that next game. But I have a problem when you're doing it in-game. That is where it's the problem.
You ever bat and the catcher was just like a total knucklehead where he goes, we're just throwing fastballs to you, young man,
because like we Crash know you. Davis.
Yeah, he's like, just throwing fastballs because we know you can't hit it. And then it's a curve, or maybe it is a fastball and you can't. Or they say we're throwing curves, and boom, it's a fastball right, you know, past you.
It's like have you ever seen Space Jam with Michael Jordan and the Looney Tunes?
Well, part of it, but okay.
So at the beginning of the movie, Jordan's playing baseball, and obviously he's not hitting all that well. And the catcher is so in awe of him, he goes, "Curveball, don't swing." He goes, "Fastball, swing." And he goes, "Fastball high, don't swing." Jordan swings through and he goes, "I told you not to swing." This is bad for baseball. I agree Cora should be punished. He's now allegedly guilty in two different spots with two different organizations. I love the analytics. I love always trying to get an edge. I love always trying to be better and find ways to better yourself. This is going too far, okay? The technology, the purity of the game is being taken out. Maybe in all sports, when you start looking at the analytics in this way, but you start looking at things in this way. I'd be for what Tom Caron said yesterday of moving the replay booth up above, and if that means J.D. Martinez can't go look at video 7 times in the course of a game and he hits 318 instead of 338, then so be it, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want cheaters. I don't want to root for cheaters, and I don't like that baseball is going in this direction.
What I don't understand is I gave you a story about batters going into the locker room or to underneath and watching a sequence of pitchers from a certain pitcher, Brady. Remember we said if a reliever was coming in, you could watch that reliever on a video back in the clubhouse or something like that. Isn't that like cheating? Well, they're doing stuff like that.
No, it's not cheating if you go to back and watch the sequence of pitches. That's not cheating. It's scouting. It's like instant scouting, but it's scouting.
Yeah, but it's like a simulator, too. It's like a pitching simulator, and you can take swings against this thing. I'll try to find the story, but it was like so intense.
No, are you talking about an actual video where they go back into the video room in between at bats, and say the guy strikes out on a 3-2 pitch. He goes back and looks at all the pitches.
Yeah. Arnie's saying basically having a batting cage where instead of a pitching machine with a little arm that rotates and throws at you, you're looking at an actual video. Here's James Paxton, and it's James Paxton's curveball, slider, and fastball, all of his velocities that move in the exact same way.
I believe that's legal, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is.
There you go.
I mean, how much more do you need something than that, though, Brady? I mean, that should pretty much, that you could use any pitcher.
How great
that should
be
enough, huh?
No, but look, I agree with you, and I said it yesterday 100 times, Brady. I think Alex Cora should get nailed for this. I really do. He did it, you know, he did it twice with two different teams. In both cases, they both won championships, and I think they should really stick it to him. As a Sox fan, I cringe at one thing, and that's losing draft picks.
Well, and for Cora and the Red Sox, they're in a bit of a different situation because the organization was warned after 2017 about not doing this, and ownership made a guarantee to Rob Manfred that they would not, that there would be nothing like this in the future. And here it was, we found out 1 year later. Jeff Passan of ESPN weighed in.
If you look at the facts, and the Major League Baseball right now believes that the Houston Astros did conspire to cheat in 2017, and the allegations against the Red Sox are not terribly surprising because a lot of teams are believed to have done something similar to this in 2018, but the fact that three former Red Sox players or officials admitted to doing this, they are going to look into this. And if Alex Cora is linked to both of those things, the punishment for him could be even greater than for anyone else involved in this.
Yeah. It was three former players or staff members who spoke to The Athletic on the condition of anonymity. I can't even say that
word. That's anonymity. A tough word.
Anonymity. I can get that one.
For all the things that Arnie can't say, the fact that he can say that, I really wonder who they were. Now, I don't know that we'll ever know.
You could narrow it down.
Well, you can narrow it down. Okay, who was there in 2018 that's not there now? Rick Porcello?
You know, we punish cheaters pretty harshly outside the sports world. You know, like I said, when you cheat on your taxes, you're going to jail sometimes, okay? If it's bad enough, we'll send you to jail. When you cheat, like on an exam in college, we're throwing you out of the school. You're done with your education, and you lose all the money that you've put toward there. You get punished pretty harshly for that.
And wouldn't you think it's possible that the leak or the mole is a pitcher, because now a pitcher's left Boston and now they're going to go somewhere else and they want it out there that the Red Sox hitters are benefiting from something. Right. So I'm thinking, okay, who's a pitcher from 2018 that's no longer here?
Well, Brian Johnson.
Brian Johnson, Stephen Wright, Rick Porcello.
Joe Kelly.
Like, these are guys that are no longer with the Red Sox.
And doesn't it feel like Joe Kelly could be that guy?
Rick Porcello.
It just seems like that's his personality.
Porcello won a lot of games with the Red Sox, scoring so many runs.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But now he's in a position to get hit by the Red Sox. Although he played for the Mets, so not, you know, maybe it wouldn't benefit Porcello to do this. One more, top four.
Number one.
Basically, number one is football, and in our region, it's down to two stories. Joe Judge being hired by the Giants, Tom Brady, all the speculation. Let's cut off the top four and four here because we're over time. But Tom Brady, let's get there when we come back because we've got an interesting poll question that a lot of you have weighed in on. We'll take more reaction.
All right, we'll get to that next. You're in the huddle. What do I point to the game?
Arnie.
Vermont. Yes, that I know that town.
Rich.
I had a first time in my life experience about an hour and a half ago.
Uh-oh.
Cannoli.
Brady. Now you're back to it. I'm like, UVM's about to play in the background. It's the huddle on 101.3 The Game.
Wow. Good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game on this Wednesday. You know, all this game show stuff. I told you, you know, you guys heard me say I wanted to bring back Bowling for Dollars. I still haven't done that, but I want to do that. Don't steal that one from me.
Isn't that something from like 1968?
Yeah, but it would be good now.
Remember Candlepins for Cash? Maybe that was a Boston thing.
No, I never heard of that.
That must have been a Boston
thing. The best game show is the one that used to be on SNY where the Mets are on. They would do beer money, where they just go around to bars. They go around to local bars and they ask you sports questions. Where if you get the first question right, you get $5, and you can either walk away or get $25.
Like cash cab in a bar.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say cash cab in a bar.
How fun is that
show? Why don't you do that in your like cash cab Uber?
A cash Uber.
Yeah, do that. You should absolutely do that.
I'd have to buy all the lights. I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford.
Put like a camera in your car, and we could see who's sitting there, and you have a game show out of it.
At this point, I'll do anything that makes me a buck.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. A lot on the Town Fair Tire text line. Alex in Moncton, with countless millions of dollars at stake with the World Series champions at stake, Corey should be banned for cheating the system. If Pete Rose is out for off-field stuff, these guys and steroid guys should be gone also. There's people that do think that he maybe should get a lifetime ban. It won't happen.
I think the third offense is a lifetime ban, and I'd be okay with that as well.
I'm sorry. I think I've got to treat this as a second offense. I know he didn't technically get any...
I agree.
Or you do think it should be?
I don't, because he's not he wasn't the ringleader in Houston. I think AJ Hinch should be punished more for the Houston issue.
Right, but he's involved for the second time in two separate teams, both of whom won the World Series the year of the scandal.
Yeah. There's a two-time offender here, as far as I'm concerned.
And I think AJ Hinch should get. I think AJ Hinch should go 80 games, no playoffs. I think Alex Cora should go 80 games, no playoffs.
But why the same penalty if he's not if one was the manager, one wasn't?
Hinch was the manager in Houston.
Right. Why the same penalty for Corb? Is it's like a second time for him? Is that what you're saying, or what?
First time offense for both as the head coach, as the manager. And I think the Red Sox are in a little bit more of a precarious situation, given that they had already been warned by Major League Baseball from the years prior.
Right. It's not like Alex Cora wasn't aware of the situation. He went out and did it anyway as manager of a completely different team from the year before.
All right, what's the poll that we have up there today?
Well, look, we have a question, 802-655-6672, and it is on Facebook as well. And, Rich, I'll start with you. You only get two options here, okay? If you're a Patriot fan, is it more painful for you to A, see Tom Brady play in another uniform, or B, stay in New England but not necessarily play well and get benched like Eli Manning did? What's more painful for you, seeing him walk away or seeing him stay and get replaced?
That's right, and I voted. Now I have to remember what I said. I would not want to see him in another uniform. I just can't picture Tom Brady wearing 12 in a Miami Dolphins shirt something.
Okay.
It's bizarre to me.
It would have been B to me because we saw it happen to Eli, and I didn't like the way it happened to Eli, and it kind of sucked. People were doubting whether he's a Hall of Famer. They took away from his legacy. A lot of other athletes have gone on to finish their careers elsewhere. It's not a new thing, and it's going to continue. Really? It's happened before Brady, and it's going to happen after Brady. I would say if he continued to play bad for the Patriots, that kind of stain his legacy, but I think it'd be kind of sad. It would bother me more if they had to bench him.
So it would bother you more, wouldn't you? What if Eli goes to the Chargers and doesn't play?
I would say actually good for him, because he wasn't getting it done with the Giants.
But doesn't play. If he has a choice of not playing in a Giants uniform.
No. The question is this. He can go play for another team.
All right. Yeah, but play is a general statement. I mean, you're saying he would be the first string quarterback.
Yes, he's going to go be a starting quarterback somewhere else, where he's going to stay in New England and be bad enough to get benched. Which one hurts more?
I'd rather take the latter. Although, as a Patriots fan, you don't want to see him so bad that he gets benched, because that means the team is probably not doing well.
I think this totally... You have to come at this from the angle of what fan are you. If you are a Patriots fan, I think you would be crushed to see Brady in another uniform. If you are just a fan of sports, though, if you are just a fan of football, if you're just a generic overarching fan, to me, it's not about... I'd hate to see Brady be so bad that all of a sudden he's replaced by some 23-year-old. That would be crushing to me as just a generic football fan. If I was a Patriots fan, which I get where you're talking about, you don't want to see him play for any other team because he's your guy and you want him to be your guy until the very end.
And what if he's good? Oh, no.
But if he is, if I'm a generic football fan and I see Tom Brady benched and he loses his job to Jarrett Stidham or some fourth rounder or whoever the Patriots have behind him, that would be pretty devastating to see, in the same way that I was devastated when Eli lost his job this year, too. And I'm not a Giants fan.
First time Texas, what happens if Tom Brady went to the XFL? You know, you laugh.
That's so absurd.
Well, you laugh. There's been stars in the NBA that have gone to play overseas after their careers have pretty much been washed out.
Stephon Marbury. He was the hero in China.
Yeah, I mean, they love him over there. So, yep. I mean, I'm not saying Brady's going to do this, but people do leave... the United States for overseas and make a lot of money. Hell, soccer players come here to play in the United States when their careers are done. to make a little bit of money out here also. It's kind of the same thing.
A lot of great NFLers went to the USFL. A lot of great NHLers went to the WHA back in the 70s.
That is true, too.
In our poll question, 59% of people, and we have nearly 200 votes on this, 59% of people say that it would be more painful to see Brady play for another team. 41% of people say it would be more painful to see him being benched in New England. And
that's a tough one.
Could you ever actually see Brady getting benched? That's the other thing. I saw people commenting, oh, Brady won't be benched no matter what. I disagree. If Brady comes in and the day arrives where the team is 1-4 and Brady's got a passer rating of 52, you know, a completion percentage of 52, and he's 4 touchdowns, 8 picks through those 5 games, I could absolutely see Belichick moving on from him in the middle of a season.
Belichick would have no problem doing that. He's not the only one who would. Yeah, he would do that.
No, but if it weren't Bill Belichick at the helm, I think it'd be a problem. I really do. I think they'd go through thick and thin with Tom Brady. Look, if they get to the point, I don't see it happening, at least not next year, but if they're like 3-9, and we're talking late in the season, maybe then. But if you're 1-4, I think you owe it to Tom Brady to let him dig himself out of that hole.
Mackie says, Brady is right. No one wants to see the GOAT play anywhere else. I don't know. It's kind of like having a wife. You could either stay with your wife and be unhappy for 20 years, or you could divorce her and let her go somewhere else, and that would that bother you seeing her with another guy? Isn't that the same thing there? Kind of the same analogy? Do you want to be miserable with her, or do you want to divorce her? And then would it bother you if she's with another guy? I think I'd say, go ahead. Goodbye. Sorry.
And by the way, tell your beloved bride that the beef stew is outstanding.
Oh, okay, there you go. Yes. I didn't mean my wife. There you go. I didn't mean my analogy.
No, but I heard the word wife and brought it up.
Continuing with the idea of Brady being benched, it's interesting to think about, too. The whole idea of the young quarterback that could replace Brady is really interesting moving forward. Because let's just say that it's not Jared Stidham. Because if it's Jared Stidham, it kind of takes this conversation out of it. So if it's not Stidham, how do the Patriots handle this? Because if they draft a quarterback, they got the 23rd pick in the draft. If they draft a quarterback in the first round and they bring Brady back, well, now you essentially are getting nothing from your first round pick next year. Rich, you say, hey, they need a lot of things, but I don't think they're that far off. If they take a quarterback, well, he's not playing.
He's going to sit.
He's going to sit. So now your first round pick's doing you nothing. And you don't have a second round pick because you traded it for Sanu. So here you are now getting nothing out of picks 1 and 2, and you kept Brady. Now, if they don't take a quarterback, they get a first round pick that can help out Brady, but they have nothing. We're continuing to kick the can down the road here on the future problem of this organization.
Or you could take Brady, and with that first pick, people are going to be climbing. We'll give you 2 number 2s and a 3 for that number one pick. And next thing you know, you're back in the game, and
I would be fine with that.
I don't think you get that much for it, but you know what I'm saying. You can get something and maybe stock up on 3rd and 4th rounders, but I don't know if that's going to help you either, to be honest.
If you think there's a quarterback for you in the 2nd round or whatever, I'd be perfectly fine with trading down to get more picks, because you have to do. Look, Gettleman said last week for the Giants, we made a mistake trying to win and rebuild at the same time. The Patriots are kind of in that mold also, where they need to not so much rebuild, but if they want to be Super Bowl level, they need significant additions here and not a whole lot of money to be able to do it through free agency. It's a situation, look, I wish they had $80 million in free agency, and look, I'll just go throw money at the problems for next offseason. They're not in that situation.
And by the way, earlier today, he Instagrammed out Tom Brady did basically eliminating plan C from A, B, and C. It sounds like he's going to be back. He says, I know I still have more to prove.
You weren't shocked about that, were you?
We have said all along since the loss to Tennessee that he has 3 options. Now I think he's narrowed it down to 2. He's either going to play for the Patriots or he's going to play for someone else.
First time texter, it's not Brady, needs better protection, period. If Lamar Jackson was on the New York Giants, we'd be just saying he's an average quarterback. We wouldn't be talking about MVP or anything like that. They would not be 13-3 or 12-4.
But I bet they'd be a lot better than they were. They wouldn't be a 4-12 team because he improvises so much.
If he was on Cleveland with a crappy coach like Kitchens was, you're going to tell me he still would have been successful there? A lot of the times, as Brady says, it depends on the situation that you fall yourself into. And that's how he was perfect situation for Baltimore. They're ready to move on from Flacco, and he was ready to take over the team. Perfect situation for him.
And the team has been built around him. They didn't go out and grab a million wide receivers. They've got 3 tight ends. They play with a fullback. They've got multiple running backs that they can go to there. They have built it schematically on the offensive line around Lamar Jackson in ways that other teams haven't done, in ways teams that haven't always been willing to do. But how this Patriots team handles the draft is going to be interesting. If they ignore the quarterback position to get Brady the requisite talent that he needs, well, great for the present, not so great for the future. If they draft for the future, make a case that that's the right thing to do, but it's going to hurt this team in the present without a first or a second round pick essentially doing anything.
And they've talked already about drafting a quarterback with a fourth or fifth, third, fourth, fifth round pick. Third round, as you said, maybe that may be their number one pick.
Yeah.
So there's no point in doing that. There really isn't. I just think that I don't think quarterback is a priority right now because we have no – I mean, obviously they know more than we do, but is Jarrett Stidham a sure non-thing at this point?
Yes.
Yes.
You have to make that decision moving forward.
They need – if they're going to keep Brady, they need to hope that Stidham is the guy. If they're not going to keep Brady, then I would be more than okay with them – hey, let's play next year with some stopgap quarterback. Let's play next year with Andy Dalton and then draft the quarterback in 2021. That's only if they're moving on from Brady. If they're moving on from Brady, then I'm okay. Let's get Dalton in here and then go get one of Arnie's 94 quarterbacks for the next
year. Yeah, there's a lot out there. 802-655-6672 if you want to go ahead and jump on in. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, interesting conversation I want to have. You've seen what's happened to Josh McDaniels being held out of some of these jobs. Should the NFL put a hiring freeze on head coaches till after the playoffs.
All right, we'll get to that next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
Back to our take on stories of the day. Call in and give us yours at 802-655-6672. The huddle is on 101.3 The Game.
All right, by the way, Alex in Moncton said Lamar Jackson's taking snaps behind an outstanding offensive line. He would have been much more pedestrian behind the Giants line. Totally agree, Arnie. Yeah, it depends on the situation. By the way, if Baltimore had injuries like Kansas City had or the Patriots had, how great would Lamar Jackson be looking right now? It all depends on, you know, how your guys stay healthy and stuff like that.
And you don't know even how Mark Ingram's going to be this week. He sat out of practice yesterday with that calf issue that sidelined him at the end of the season. So we're talking about Josh McDaniels a lot lately because he's interviewing for head coaching jobs again. He's going to interview with the Giants. Didn't even get that interview because they gave the job to Joe Judge. And he's going to interview with Cleveland presumably on Friday, as long as they don't make a surprise hire beforehand. But you've seen guys that are still playing or guys that have played in the playoffs. Josh McDaniels, things started moving fast. He got shut out of some jobs. Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City is still playing, getting shut out of some jobs. So interesting discussion that's come up again this year. Should the NFL not allow you to make head coaching hires until after the playoffs, and that way everybody's at an even playing field? What do you think of that?
Well, can they still do interviews?
I would imagine yes, you can do the interviews, but you have to, you know, you can't make the hire official. You have to kind of go through your whole gamut of interviews and give everybody a chance.
Right. I have no problem as long as, are we talking about this for the Rooney Rule and to get more minority coaches hired, or is this just to give everybody an equal chance that are in the playoffs?
No, it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with timing.
Yes, it's timing.
I mean, it's
because a lot of people are complaining about the Rooney Rule today.
It's completely unfair to the guys from Baltimore and Kansas City and all the other teams that are still around. And this was a problem for Josh McDaniels for years.
It's completely unfair.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know what? I want to turn the letters on Wheel of Fortune, but my last name's not Sajak. That's completely unfair. So life is not fair, my friend. If we're just doing this because you want everybody, if we were doing this, if you said, hey, we want to make it fair because we want more minority coaches hired, I said, okay, let's think about this. Let's go ahead and make it an even playing field for everybody out there. But just to say, oh, you know, some coaches that are on a good team, they can't, take a job because they're in the playoffs.
Too damn bad. I mean, that's true. Yeah, what you just said is the case. That doesn't seem fair to me.
I would say that the guys in Baltimore and Kansas City actually are okay because they had a bye week. McDaniels this time around is the one who got shafted that his team was playing. He could not do any interviews while game planning for organizational interviews. So like last week, Eric Bieniemy, Robert Saleh, who's the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, those guys were able to interview. McDaniels wasn't. And look, I don't know if he would have gotten the Giants job, but if he had been able to interview last week, it's possible. Now, Joe Judge was in the same position that he was and was able to overcome that, but McDaniels at least has gotten the short end of the stick here. You're right. It's unfair. However, I can't think of a better option. I can't think of a better option because the combine is just a couple weeks after the Super Bowl. The draft is just 2.5 months after the Super Bowl. Free agency is a month and a change after the Super Bowl. If we're telling everybody you can't even make your hire until February 10th, well, when's the rest of my staff getting hired? And when are we doing... How are we doing our combine prep? How are we doing our free agent prep? How are we doing our budgeting, our draft prep? You're not leaving yourself a lot of time if you're saying everybody can't start the league year until February 10th.
That's what Andrew says. Waiting for the end of the year is not fair. Teams with staffs are able to immediately begin their offseason scoring and drafting plans, offseason free agency planning, stuff like that. If a team without a coach has to wait, they're already behind those teams who have their staff and are working on the important things.
Completely agree with that. And then if you take it one step further, well, okay, there will be no league business conducted. You're not allowed to be in the office until February 10th when everybody's on an even playing field. Well, now everybody's behind the eight ball. And you might say, well, okay, that's fair and that everybody's on the same schedule, but you're trying to do a lot of things here. Now, what, you're going to push back the combine?
Right.
The draft, free agency, you're going to push OTAs, minicamp. You'd alter the entirety of the league schedule.
And what about LSU and Clemson's coaching staff? You can't tell me there aren't some people that are salivating at grabbing some of those guys. You can't go near them for 4 or 5 weeks longer than some of the other teams.
You could talk to them if you really want them that bad. You could hold a job. Los Angeles wanted me take a job, and they wouldn't let me out of my contract in Chicago. So they kept they kept the job open for 1 year for me until I can get there. And then finally, after a year, I got out. Mojo says, by Arnie's logic, life isn't fair. I could punch him in the face and just walk away. Hey, life's unfair. Some people get punched and some don't. Yes, life isn't fair, but sports can be. How about that? We got a call. Who's on the line, Brady?
We got Jake in Williston, who we play basketball with.
Jake, good afternoon. You're in the huddle. 1.3 the game. What's going on, Jake?
Mostly calling to say Happy New Year and all that good stuff. So
Happy New Year, Jake.
Hey, everybody. But on this conversation of the league schedule and how it works, I actually think it's on purpose. I've for a long time sort of believed that the reason we have the playoff turnover each year to year in the NFL is actually largely due to these type of administrative processes. And I think it's on purpose. I think the league doesn't change it because it creates parity, and they think that's what they want. So I just thought I'd get some thoughts on the idea that this is actually more intentional than we realize, and that these administrative gaps are not actually gaps. They're intentional.
Hmm. Is it kind of like giving the bad team the first pick and working your way down? So
exactly right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. No, good call. Appreciate it, Jake.
You push him all over the floor?
Arnie gets in fights with him.
Pretty much.
He seemed like a pretty reasonable, articulate guy.
He can't guard me.
Yes, he can.
Of course, he hangs up and then starts talking.
You know, that's an interesting... I hadn't given any thought to that kind of, quote, conspiracy theory, but you are right that when you allow... But you know what? Does that make a lot of sense? Because think about it from, like, McDaniel's standpoint. Well, McDaniels doesn't get a job, so we think McDaniels is a good coach. So now what, a good coach stays with the Patriots, and the Patriots stay good, rather than trying to just take away player, you know, take away all these people from the Patriots staff, which would, in theory, injure them more.
I mean, you look at the schedule for the Giants and Carolina and the schedule of coaching interviews I'm talking about. It was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The Giants, I guess it was, had already talked to three guys. But if you're a coach of Seattle or Minnesota or any team that just played, that guy can't be on the list. I mean, Robert Saleh was only on the Giants list, and he was able to get an interview with him because his team just happened to get a bye. That seems very unfair to me.
Kevin Stefanski, who's the offensive coordinator for the Vikings, he is going to interview for the Browns tomorrow, but he's got to be taking away something from his Vikings duties here, and they're getting ready to play here this weekend. The other thing, too, Arnie, is think about this. If you're a college coach that's looking to get into the NFL, if they said, okay, you can't hire until after the Super Bowl, you'd never get a job because you can't be a college coach and all of a sudden, you know, not have a job until February 10th.
No, but if you have a job, you just go on recruiting. And then if you get another job, you tell the kids sorry and you're moving on. And that's the way they do it.
But that's really, really hard. It's already hard when they do it in December, but to do it in February?
Who was it? Manny Diaz, the former...
Miami.
Yeah, he did it for Temple. And he was the defensive coordinator, I believe, for Texas. Yeah, he did it. He did it like in a week. Well, he did it like a week.
You know, think about it. If you're Matt Rhule, and you're going to stay at Baylor, and then all of a sudden in February you're going to leave, you're putting that college in a precarious situation.
Yes, you are. It is a trickle-down effect. But then again, any kid that you recruited, you're putting in a bad situation because he's most likely coming to the college because of you and, you know, not because of the school, even though they tell you not to do that. All right, 2 hours are in the books. The Power Hour is coming up next. Brady will tell you what's trending. Then we'll start the Power Hour off with Buster Olney. Yeah. He'd start things off. That's coming up next. You're in the huddle.
1-1-3, the game. From the batting cage to the clubhouse, he's got all the answers you need. It's time for our weekly talk with Randolph Center, Vermont native son, and ESPN baseball insider, Buster Olney. 101.3, the game.
Good evening, everyone. You're in the huddle. What a 1.3 the game. It is the Power Hour of the show, mere moments away from Buster Olney. We'll talk to Buster.
Who?
Buster Olney.
Who's he?
We got a lot of baseball to get to.
What's it been, a month?
It has been a little bit of a while.
Wow, we haven't talked to Buster in ages.
Let me get to the story real quick while Brady's getting Buster on the line. Kyle Rudolph, the one that caught the touchdown pass for Minnesota
pushed.
In overtime.
Yes, pushed off.
Kyle Rudolph took to Twitter because of what somebody put on Twitter. I guess his gloves that he used to catch that final ball with for an overtime were put on eBay for $375.
Okay.
And they are his gloves. And people want to know what's going on here. Are you selling them? He said, I saw this. This is from Kyle Rudolph on Twitter. I saw this. It's disappointing. A member of the media in the locker room after the game asked if he could have my gloves for a charity benefit. So I said, of course, and I'll sign them for you.
Oh, no.
Well, he got me. He sold them on eBay 3 days later.
Those people exist.
Oh, there's people in the media that will pick anything up off the ground and just put it in their bag or something like that. Remember the guy that was stealing Tom Brady jerseys? Remember that?
Yes, it was a member of the media, as it turns out.
Yes. I don't know whatever happened to that guy.
Well, I'm excited to talk to Buster. I feel like it's been a month. What are we at, 36 days till pitchers and catchers, something like that?
Truck day is, I think, in 4 weeks or something like that.
All right. We'll go right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line joining us now. Thanks to ESPN and also of Lucky Trailer Sales and Peterbilt of Vermont, it's Buster Olney. How you doing, Buster?
I'm doing great. Very happy. My Vikings, successful on Sunday, and my son happens to be the biggest Titan fan north of the Mason-Dixon line. I'm not going to try to explain how he became a Titans fan, but it was a huge weekend in our house.
So if it's Titans-Vikings in the Super Bowl, is there going to be a problem? Or
I would probably go to a hotel. It would be ugly.
Oh, I love it. All right, Buster, we're coming out with the hard-hitting stuff. Your reaction, you heard the news about the Red Sox sign-stealing back in 2018, the year they won the World Series. What's your initial reaction when you hear that?
Well, and it's funny because I texted some players right away because we know what the Astros did. They did it in real time, what Houston did, where they had a monitor locked in on the catcher, and then as they determined what the pitch selection was going to be, they sent some sort of an audio signal out there, banging the trash can, whatever it was. This is a little different. And in talking with players yesterday, I got the feeling that if half the teams in baseball didn't engage in some form of this over the last few years, that would be a shock. You'd have potentially starting pitchers, standing down in the runway with where the TV monitor is and seeing what the sign is and then letting the second baseman go is one. Executive said to me, that's a lot closer to gamesmanship than what the Astros are accused of doing. So I feel like that the impact of that is a little bit overstated and out of context.
So, Buster, then what do you think a proper organizational punishment would be for Boston at this point?
Well, my big question, and here's the potential complication, and I don't have the answer to this. It's just a question that I have, and I haven't gotten this question answered. Alex Cora was the bench coach for the Houston Astros when they were banging the trash cans back in 2017.
Right.
And, he was the manager of the Red Sox in 2018. So is it potentially going to be a situation where crimes, for lack of a better way to describe them, are going to stack up when it comes to the punishment that Alex winds up facing? Or maybe it's not going to be a factor at all. I don't know the answer, but I suspect that that would be the greatest potential impact on the Red Sox. I don't think, based on what I've heard from players, from club executives, that what the Red Sox are accused of doing is considered to be nearly as egregious as what the Astros were.
Well, Buster, organizationally, though, the Red Sox were punished or were warned in 2017 under John Farrell, and Alex Cora allegedly came in and brought in some kind of system in 2018. The fact that the Red Sox as an organization are a multi-time offender, does that mean we're going to take away a first-round draft pick, international signing money? Like, where can this go?
I don't know. We all are wondering what exactly the penalties are going to be, how severe they're going to be. As I've told you guys in the past, if you told me that someone were to get a year-long suspension, it wouldn't shock me. If I were to hear that someone got a half-year suspension, that wouldn't shock me. If someone got a lifetime ban, that wouldn't shock me either. Because, Brady, of what you just said, that the commissioner put everybody on notice, and I really feel like that, you know, after that Apple Watch thing happened, you know, whether it's the Red Sox, the Astros, or whatever team, it was almost like there were certainly clubs after that that just thumbed their nose at the commissioner. And as I, you know, wrote a piece last year about this, that, you know, and he not only has to deal with the discipline for the acts, but I also think he's got to send a message to everybody involved that, look, when we say something, when we tell you not to do something, it's not within your power just to ignore us and plow ahead and break rules.
Well, Buster, Rich and I are in agreement on this. Arnie differs a little bit, but Rich and I think treat it like a PED suspension and suspend Cora 80 games and take away the playoffs for 2019 or 2020.
Boy, they wouldn't do that.
You think that's too much?
No, I don't think they would take away the playoffs.
I didn't think
you know,
that
this is, it's one thing to be college. You know, college sports, it's a whole other thing in professional sports because you're selling tickets to fans.
Not the team, Cora.
I'm sorry?
Not the team as a whole taking away the
okay.
Alex Cora.
I was like, wow, that's pretty serious. I would suspect that if they could affirm all the details you're talking about, that might wind up being something close to the case. I do think they're going to come down with a hammer.
What about the players that cheated? The players that went ahead and went into that room.
I don't think that's going to be nearly as much because, let's face it, any discipline that baseball would try to render, they would have to go through the union. There's no agreement, per se, I think that would necessarily address this particular type of offense. And I kind of look at the whole thing anyway is like when you talk about offenses with the Army, you know, you can't really get on the privates quite so much as you can the majors and the colonels and the generals. And that's why I think the generals and the colonels, in other words, you know, Jeff Luhnow, general manager of the Astros, Alex Cora, A.J. Hinch, you know, being the colonels, I think those guys are the ones who are going to get whacked.
Wow. All right, Buster, enough of that stuff. Let's get to something a little happier. I mean, how would you look at
and by the way, that is absolutely, I think it's, we are right at the cusp of finding out about the penalties on that stuff.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
How would you describe the overall offseason for baseball? Anything percolating that we should know about?
Oh, big time. I think it's actually been a really positive offseason for baseball in terms of the movement. I mean, last winter we spent all of January and February complaining about the slow player movement and there wasn't a lot of action. Well, this winter there has been a lot of action. You know, when you have and the perception of some of the teams is that Scott Boras, who had a lot of the unsigned players the last couple of years as we started spring training, has worked a lot faster. I had one general manager say to me the other day, you have to give Scott credit that Scott made an adjustment, which is a good thing because he happened to represent so many of the top guys. But I do think it's spurred interest in baseball that, you know, Gerrit Cole signs with the Yankees and Anthony Rendon, you know, winds up going to the Angels and so many of these teams being active. I think that's been really good for baseball. I do think that one thing everyone wonders is when we show up in spring training and they open up the box of balls, for the first time, how are those going to travel? No one seems to really know, and no one seems to really know what to expect.
Buster Olney of ESPN joins us every single Wednesday thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales in Peterbilt of Vermont. They are more than just trailer and truck sales. You can go visit them in their Colchester location. Buster, I agree with you. It's been a fun off season from the hot stove perspective, but you got the minor league baseball contraction issue looming, and you've got sign stealing. Is it really that great?
Well, the minor league baseball thing is something that hangs over the sport. I don't think it's going to affect at the big league level this year, but it feels like that it's a box that they're in right now that they're going to have a really tough time getting out of. That no matter what direction, I've had some minor league owners tell me this, no matter what direction they go, it's going to be an imperfect solution because the fact that that list of 42 teams leaked out and now there are questions, and, I mean, you guys have seen all the, you know, the threats going back and forth between the two sides. That in itself, I think baseball's relationship with the minor league teams is not a good thing, but I'm just talking more about Major League Baseball.
How about Mookie Betts' David Price possibly going to the Dodgers? We continue to hear this as a possibility. The Dodgers want to make a big splash. Betts could be that guy, and they need some pitching help.
Yeah, and that, I think, would be an owner-driven deal because Andrew Friedman, who's the, you know, the head of baseball ops for the Dodgers, doesn't typically make deals like that. But it was interesting the other day reading an interview that Stan Kasten, the president of the Dodgers, did addressing the whole question of whether or not the Dodgers have been aggressive enough. It kind of makes me laugh a little bit because the Dodgers at times have had the highest payroll in baseball. They won the National League West, what, seven times? They went into this past October favorites to win their series against the Nationals. They were beaten by a hot team. And so the idea that somehow they've been a failure is kind of laughable to me, but there's no doubt that I think there's pressure on the organization, and Stan acknowledged this, to go that next level. Now, do I think that they'll be taking on Mookie Betts? I'm not sure. I did ask a general manager earlier today if he still believes that Mookie Betts will be traded before spring training, and his perception is, yes, that both Betts and Francisco Lindor will be dealt sometime before we start the season. I don't know if I agree with that, but that's what he believes.
You know, it's so funny. I was going to ask you about Lindor because the Indians are saying, hey, we feel a little bit better now that he could, you know, go ahead and stay here. I'm wondering what they're going to get for him, you know?
Yeah, I don't think that they believe he's going to stay. Let's face it, and you having an affinity for the Mets, I do wonder if the crossroad between Francisco Lindor and a Mets-Yankees bidding war is going to play out absolutely perfectly because Steve Cohen, the new Mets owner, goes into power. That'll be about the time Lindor is going to become a free agent in two winters.
Oh, wow.
And we know that the Yankees don't necessarily have a long-term solution at shortstop. Gleyber Torres could play it, but I think the general perception is he's going to wind up being better at second or third base. Can you imagine an incoming new owner of the Mets going toe-to-toe with the Steinbrenners and the Yankees over Francisco Lindor? That'll be really interesting. But, just generally speaking, I think it's not a question of if the Indians are going to trade Lindor. It's a question of when.
Wow.
Because they're not going to be the team to pay him $350, $400 million.
You mentioned the Yankees, Buster. Domingo Germán gets half a season suspension for that violation of the domestic violence policy. Is that in line with what you figured it would be? Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, and from what I understand, it basically the way that this played out was that the incident happened, and within 48 hours, most of the details were known by Major League Baseball to the point that they were very comfortable taking him off the field. If you guys remember, very quickly we learned that he was not going to be eligible for the postseason. And then I think at that point lawyers got involved. But the fact that he missed the last month of the regular season, missed all of the postseason, I think gave you some indication about how serious the baseball thought this was. And you figure if, you know, you look at the precedents before the major violations under the domestic violence policy, it's typically, you know, 70 to 80 games, and that's right where he fell in line.
Buster, I read a really interesting article today. I wanted your perspective on this. Fans of the Yankees, fans of baseball, often wrestle with how should they feel about a player. And in Domingo Germán's case, there's no police report, there's no formal charges. We as fans don't know exactly what happened, so you kind of struggle trying to figure out, okay, how should I feel about this guy? Do we as fans have any right to know what transpired or anything of what baseball knows?
Boy, hey, I mean, it's a great quandary. I mean, another example, that was Roberto Osuna, right?
Yeah.
Of the Toronto Blue Jays, he was arrested for for an incident that happened. In the end, I think that the charges were either deferred or they went away, basically. But in the interim, he agreed to a significant suspension with Major League Baseball. And I know this. If I were a fan of a team, I would not feel good about my team acquiring a player, having a player with a situation like that. But look, Major League Baseball can, you know, to a high degree, can only follow the facts. And I'm not speaking about the Germán case specifically because I don't know exactly what the details are. but you guys know, generally speaking, in cases of domestic violence, a lot of the police often are frustrated, for lack of a better word, in terms of getting details, because a lot of times the potential witnesses, in other words, the victim, stops talking.
Yeah.
And I think that's at times where Major League Baseball, you know, gets into a box, and I think that's where authorities get into a box in dealing with all this. And so there aren't necessarily facts that can be published if one of the people involved is not willing to come out and talk about them.
Buster Olney, ESPN, joins us every single Wednesday thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales. And Peterbilt of Vermont, Buster, will have a happier question for you to end on. You wrote a book about 20 years ago, The Last Days of the Yankee Dynasty. Kind of tell me what you thought when you wrote that book, because we're trying to figure out if these are the last days of the Patriots dynasty.
Well, we know.
Yep.
But, yeah.
The book was The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty, and it absolutely occurred to me last week leading up to that game that you could build a similar type of structure in a book around the Patriots, because it certainly felt that way. I know what Brady said earlier today, and I don't really have any special insight. But let's face it, with everything that we saw, with Brady getting older, it definitely felt like to me, like, okay, that might be it for this this incredible group of successful people who accomplished so much together.
What would you do if you were Tom Brady? Would you tell
I would
him?
Retire.
Really?
Yeah. Again, I don't have any special insight, right. But... it just felt like all year, and listening to the statements, you know, and Belichick, the way that he talked about, in a way that we've never heard him talk about Brady's physical issues, talked about it more than ever, basically to explain to people that he wasn't always able to play. He's not going to get younger.
No.
And unless
sure.
you're ready to dive in and start giving him major weapons at wide receiver, it kind of reminds me of Eli Manning. I don't know if you guys feel that way, too.
Yeah.
In recent years, you know, Eli Manning had gone from being a guy who could make great plays in the Super Bowl and help you win to being a guy who needed a lot of help.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where Brady's beginning to get to.
Well, as they tell you, Father Time is undefeated. He's Buster Olney of ESPN. Thanks to Lucky's Trailer Sales and Peterbilt of Vermont. Buster, always a pleasure. Have a great week. We'll speak to you next week.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks,
Buster Olney, as always, joining us. Of ESPN, get a little bit. You feel better now. Getting
all
a little
is right with the
run.
World. It just suddenly warmed up 25, 30 degrees outside.
It's actually cold out there, windy.
It is. It's howling.
It is howling out there, but you can't wait for your spring training. You're ready to go. How many days until pitchers and catchers?
36.
Gosh, why don't we have a saying? How many days until forwards and guards report? Or how many days until the quarterbacks
right.
and wide receivers? How many days until quarterbacks report?
Right.
That should be like a special day in the NFL.
How many days till right wingers?
Yes,
arrive?
Exactly.
Well,
goalies have arrived.
When the Red Sox are in third place in May and their manager is being suspended, Rich will be saying, "How many days until training camp?"
Yes, you know, he will be saying that. Yeah, for
it's
sure.
really interesting. I want to follow up something Buster said. 802-655-6672. It was a really interesting article in The Athletic today. It was Lindsay Adler, who covers the Yankees, about the Herman thing. Fans get very conflicted. And I know that I have come down generally on the hard side of not wanting to support teams that have players, you know.
Osuna.
Osuna, Herman. I don't want guys like that. I especially don't want to go out and acquire them. It's one thing if you already have them like Herman in-house and you can kind of – you know the person, you can nurture them and all that. I hate acquiring somebody like that, but fans want to know what happened so that they can have the facts in front of them in order to make a judgment. And Lindsay Adler's point was, and I think Buster is correct too, victims won't always come forward if they know that their stories are going to be plastered all over the media. So we as fans want to know what's going on for our own selfish desires to be able to make an informed opinion about how we feel. But if you start doing that, then victims aren't going to want to be as willing to come forward, and you have to protect the victim as well as the accused in case it ends up not being true in some way.
Well, look at the Antonio Brown situation. The timing of when that woman came forward changed the entire football season for the Patriots. I mean, that arrived as he arrived in the Patriots locker room, basically, and it, for all we know, he could have been a Patriot for the entire season if it weren't for that. It was. And look, I'm not saying whether she's right or wrong, but I'm talking about the timing being a huge element in that whole situation.
But you, as a Patriot fan, would like to know, okay, what exactly? Well, she's put out there what Antonio Brown allegedly did to her. We don't know what Domingo Herman did. We have no idea. There's no police report. There are no formal charges. I would very much like to, you know, I am hard in saying I'd like the Yankees to get rid of him, but I know Yankee fans are out there conflicted. Here's this guy who's been suspended for domestic violence. It's the fourth longest suspension in baseball history. for that offense.
But he's 18-4.
There's got to be something bad there, but they don't know what it is. So it's up to every individual person to decide, can they support Domingo Germán? Fans would like to know what he allegedly did, but we're not going to know, and I don't know that we as fans have a right to know, because you have to protect the alleged victim.
I wonder if there was eyewitness account of that. I don't know.
A member of Major League Baseball saw it. That's right. That's part of the reason why it happened so quickly.
Okay, because if you didn't see anything and you don't have eyewitness account, I don't know how they can go ahead and then give him 81 games. They'd have to go ahead and interview people and try to find out and get the facts.
Hey, well, that's why the AB story keeps going. Brittany Taylor?
Brittany Taylor, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody has anything on that story right now. That's just dragging out.
What is the, is there a next date for baseball, or is it just pitchers and catchers report? That's pretty much it.
Well, they load the trucks up at Fenway Park in a couple of weeks.
When is the next big signing going to happen, though?
Josh Donaldson is probably the next one to fall. Atlanta, Minnesota, they're the ones. Texas, to a degree, all in on him. He's looking somewhere. I think he's already got an $80 million offer on the table.
So it's not going to be like last year where we're waiting all during the 5 weeks for people to get signed.
No, no, no.
I mean, even through spring training, Martinez wasn't even signed a couple of years ago. Right. Remember that?
It went way. It was very late, which is one of the reasons I think the Red Sox got a pretty good deal for that, because it just wasn't happening. They had to... JD's camp had to say yes to something.
But it's not going
to
be like that this year.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've already seen a lot of it.
And the Mookie thing's going to – it'll be interesting to see if the ball drops on that anytime soon, at all.
The Mookie trade will be big. As far as signings, Josh Donaldson's next. Marcelo Zuna, the good outfielder who played for the Marlins and the Cardinals, he's in there too. It's going to be – what I think you're going to see more of, you've already seen this once Seattle did it, once the White Sox did it. Because of baseball's looming – labor crisis that's coming, young players want to get their money early. You're going to start seeing more and more people who are in the minors getting long-term extensions, guys that have never even made the team yet because organizations want to lock them up for a long time, and they want to get their money considering there might be a lockout or a strike or whatever.
First time texter, Rich, what about your Bruins?
Oh, yeah, them.
They did win, so.
I was pretty ecstatic last night. It was like, oh, there are the good Bruins. It's so funny. You look at the Bruins. They have like the tied for the best record in the NHL or most points or whatever it is with Washington. And yet you sit there and you go, man, they just can't seem to win. They sure won last. What they're doing is they're getting 1 point a night by losing an overtime or a shootout. But great win last night. Pekka Rinne, has anybody gone off the cliff faster with his career than that guy?
Oh, my goodness.
He was a second-round fantasy pick for me this year. He's been absolutely horrible.
Oh, God. Fantasy hockey.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It's already been addressed. I've already talked about that.
Seriously.
Wow, what was that?
Rich, let's take tomorrow off and go to the Bruins game. We'll drive on that.
Twist my arm.
Look at Freddie.
We just talked fantasy hockey stuff.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I was listening to the Montreal sports station a little bit today. That city is furious at that hockey team and that front office. They have had it.
Furious at you for mentioning Pekka Rinne, second round fantasy hockey pick.
In a free league. What if I told you it was $100?
Then I'd be okay with it.
Would you? I'm asking Brady because he's the one that gets all pissy about
these
things.
I'd be more okay about you talking about fantasy sports if you told me there was $100 on it.
Okay, well, as you know, that's not going to be the case. There's not $100 to give out. So.
And it doesn't have
60 seconds of my life I'll never get back.
Wow. 802-655-6672. If you want to go ahead and jump on in. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Let's get to something absolutely relevant to our audience.
Guess, Tom Brady.
Yes, Rich. Yes. Ding, ding, ding. That's where we're going. Tom Brady on Instagram today. He's not retiring, people.
All right. We'll get to that next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
Go, boys. Get it out there and score.
The huddle.
When you take over a team, sometimes you want to make your mark.
Finally got a scoop after all the years of doing this show.
Not extending a 42-year-old quarterback probably is the best.
The huddle. Break. Weekdays from 3 to 6 on 101.3 The Game.
All right, good evening, everyone. You're in the huddle. What a 1.3 The Game. By the way, that Kyle Rudolph story must have just broke because people all over Twitter are just commenting it. They're calling this guy scum. He's the this of the earth. How you can ask for gloves for charity and then sell it on eBay or whatever he sold it on. And pocket the money, and oh, they're just going after this guy.
So it's right up there with the people who steal charity coin boxes out of convenience stores. The absolute slime of the earth.
You have to read some of the media people and what they're saying about they're outing him and what they're saying about the guy. Oh, it's all over. It's
worse
hysterical.
Worse than tailgaters. It's unbelievable. If that's possible.
Wow. All right. Ready to get to the mistake of the day.
Mistake of the day. 802-655-6672. Thanks to Embroidery Works, Joanne's Uniforms, Heineberg Drive in Colchester. Right now on our website, 1013thegame.com, and on our Facebook page, 1013thegame, you can read in full Tom Brady's lengthy message to Patriots Nation after the 2019 season. He put it on Instagram. We have it for you on our social media channels as well. I'll kind of go to the end of it here. In both life and football, failure is inevitable. You don't always win. You can, however, learn from that failure, pick yourself up with great enthusiasm, and place yourself in the arena again. And that's right where you will find me, because I know I still have more to prove. Arnie, I read that simply as Tom Brady is not retiring.
That eliminates choice number three.
I think we're all in agreement there. It eliminates he's not retiring. He says, I still have more to prove. You and Rich both take it a little bit differently than me on the next part, though. You believe that his lengthy message indicates he wants back only with the Patriots.
I think he wants back, but I think he does want back with the Patriots. And would love to come back with the Patriots, but he's putting it out there now in case the Patriots don't want him to show, hey, it's not me, it's the Patriots that are pushing me out. And then he wants to give other teams time to realize, hey, I'm going to be out there, come get me. So I think he wanted to get ahead of this quickly and tell people, look, I want to come back. At least that's the way I read it. I want to come back. It's up to the Patriots, and if the Patriots say no, then he wants other teams to know that he's available.
Most of it was just sounding like a self-help guru about picking yourself up under tough circumstances. And I mean, it was right out of a Tony Robbins self-help tape or whatever. But he also said a couple of things in past tense, which caught my ear a little bit. Every one of us that works at Gillette Stadium strived to do their best. Not strives. And I mean, look, we're nitpicking this thing right down to every word. But I saw a couple of instances talking in a past tense, and that kind of got me a little bit nervous that he might be thinking about heading out the door.
But see, that I don't get either one of you, because you both told me today, this morning, you told me in person, you told me in a text, I think this means I want to be back with the Patriots. Arnie, I think it was you who said, oh, he's in a Patriots jersey in this picture. That must mean he wants only back in New England.
See, I said that he wants to come back to the Patriots. Doesn't mean the Patriots want him.
Right. No, what I think about this is that he wants to come back. I'm just trying to nitpick it and get it down to the possibility that there's something else in there, because I don't think there is.
And I'm not so sure Belichick wants him back.
I believe he wants back with the Patriots. I think that that's known. Peter King told us on Monday. The question for me is always, as it has had, that I've said for months, is going to come down to the money. And we'll get to that in 3 minutes from now. I believe that's what it's going to ultimately come down to one way or the other.
Can I just disagree with you on that? I don't think money... Really?
What if it's extreme? What if the Patriots say no more than 22?
The reason I don't say money is important is because he's just looking at this as respect. This is all about respect. This is not about...
But isn't money respect in sports?
This is not really about him pocketing $25 million. This is not him pocketing that type of money, Brady. This is him just wanting to show everybody the respect that he deserved over all these years. That's all he really wants here. That's all he wants.
The big thing to me, the takeaway from this, and I was really surprised he came out this quickly about it, because we basically assumed we were going to be debating A, B, or C. Which one's going to happen? He comes back as a Patriot. He comes back as a player on another team. Or he retires. He immediately, just days after the final game of the season, basically eliminated the option of retiring with that note, with that Instagram.
100% believe he's not retiring. He says, I still have more to prove. Put yourself in the arena again. Yep. I didn't take anything more from it than that. I didn't think it was a message to the Patriots. I didn't think it was a message to other teams. I think it was solely to the fans. Hey, so fans, thank you for your support this year. And two, we tried our best. It doesn't always work out. Well, you know, next year I'll be back with something to prove, meaning I'll be back in football. I didn't take it any more than that. As for the money aspect, Arnie, did you see the tweet last night, Mike Giardi, NFL Network? Okay, Tom feels like he deserves multi-years. He feels like he deserves market value.
Yeah.
I don't see the Patriots doing either one of those two things. It will be an incredible game of chicken. And I've got more, because Mike Giardi was on my old station in Albany today, and he addressed that tweet with them.
And to which I say, I'm sure there are going to be a couple teams, and that's, you know, whether those
those scenarios fit what Tom wants and what his family wants, I don't know. But I'm sure that there will be a couple of multi-year offers for good guaranteed dollars. And then for the Patriots, it's, you know, how high are you willing to go? And I find it hard to believe that after the last couple seasons of not willing to pay him market value, not willing to give the multi-years, that all of a sudden now, as he heads into age 43, that they're just going to change their mind.
I think that's a very real issue here.
I disagree with that. I think if the Patriots said, we'll give you 1 year, $25 million, or another team says, we'll give you 2 year, $50 million, I think he'll take the 1 year. I think he'll take the 1 year to stay with the Patriots and won't care about the multi-year. I don't think that's really as important as everybody's making him out to be. Maybe if he went to another team, then it's important to get the multi-year. But I think if the Patriots came back and said, we'll give you a 1 year deal, I think he'd love to sign that.
I think I agree with you just based on what he's done for the last 9 weeks of the season. I think he can see the handwriting on the wall. I think his dream of going to 45 may have been brought down, not necessarily completely, but I think he's looking at his idea of making it to 45 as possibly a pipe dream. I mean, can you imagine Tom Brady in a Patriots uniform three years from now?
How about what Dan said? I thought Brady's use of Gillette rather than the Patriots was telling and perhaps signaled a non-allegiance to the team. I'm not following him.
He's saying everybody who worked at Gillette Stadium as opposed to everyone who works for the Patriots.
Oh, I didn't pick that up.
He said that, but I took that just to mean everybody in the building, like from the janitors to the players to the coaches.
Is he reading too much into that?
You know, I saw that too, and I said, he's thanking everybody in sight, and that kind of makes me wonder, is he heading out? It's basically a thank you to everyone, as you said, from the janitor on up.
Well, wouldn't you say everybody in Patriot Nation? Wouldn't that cover everybody in Patriots Nation?
No, I just think about everybody who was a part of Gillette Stadium this year. Parking attendants, we all strive to do our best.
I can see Dan thinking that. I can see some conspiracy theory in what Dan's saying. I can see some people believing that.
Arnie, market value. I'm trying to find the exact pure, like, okay, I'm trying to figure out.
What market value for a quarterback?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find the exact list of what quarterback's per year salary is. I only have the total contract.
Well, I think they said if Dak Prescott got franchise tagged, he'd make $26 or $28 million. Am I right on that? So isn't that put you in, the top five? Is that, or top three? Is that what the franchise tag is supposed to do?
Yes, top three.
So if the top three or top five.
Right now, Russell Wilson, $35 million. That's number one. Ben Roethlisberger, 34. That's number two.
Where's Aaron Rodgers?
Jared Goff, 3, 33.5. Aaron Rodgers, tied, 33.5.
Okay.
Carson Wentz, 32. That's top five.
Yeah.
The top five. The top six all make above $30 million a year. That's Matt Ryan when you include him.
And Dak will make a franchise, so that means Dak will have to get one of those $32 million. I thought it was $28 million.
Well,
why did I think it was so cheap for Dak Prescott?
If Tom Brady wants, quote, market value, what exactly does he think he's worth? Does he think he's worth 30? I mean, if I'm Tom Brady, I sit here and think, okay, I'm better than Matt Ryan.
You would say market value is top 10. So whatever number 10 is getting.
Nope. The Patriots should be glad with market value if that's what he's thinking, as opposed to, well, you owe me for the last 20 years with 6 Super Bowls.
Number 10 is $25 million, Derek Carr.
I would say he deserves $25 million. That's what the number we've been talking about all along anyway.
I would give Tom Brady $25 million also. But if Tom Brady says, I want $32 million and I want 2 years, I think that's going to be a problem.
I would offer him $50 million for 2 years. If he said he wanted $60 million, I'd give him the damn $60
million. And frankly, I wouldn't even give Tom Brady 2 years. Now, I understand the sentimentality of it all. And if Robert Kraft says, The sentimental side of this is more important to me than everything else. I don't care as much about the winning football team in 2021 as I do about showing appreciation for Tom Brady. Then fine. I just hope you say that publicly so that then we know exactly where the organization's going. But if you're telling me that you think a 2-year deal for Tom Brady at this point of his career is going to help the Patriots win Super Bowls better than other plans, I would tell you that you are wrong.
He says about the money, though. Is this crazy? I think Robert Kraft could make more money with Tom Brady at quarterback and losing the first round than taking Stidham and going to the Super Bowl.
But is that what Robert Kraft wants?
I don't think he cares. He went to nine Super
Bowls. I think he cares a lot.
Excuse me, he went to 9 Super Bowls.
Yep, more reason he cares more.
I think he'd... I'll tell you what, I'll say this about Robert Kraft. Here's a hot sports opinion. I think Robert Kraft would rather lose in the playoffs with Brady than go back to the Super Bowl with Stidham.
You might be right about the money when it comes to Kraft saying... Kraft will make more money. You might be right about that.
I don't know how. However, but it might be.
The question is simply: does number one, the fans? I don't think care about that.
No, they don't care about.
Okay,
it, of course not.
So if Robert Kraft says taking care of Tom Brady, who's like my blood son, is more important to me than putting out a winning football team, then come out and say it publicly, so at least the fans know where you're going with this. But if you're telling me what's the best path towards winning Super Bowls, right, I don't believe signing Tom Brady long-term for 2 years is the best way to do that. And I love Tom Brady, but if you're telling me from a business and football standpoint, Brady for 2 years versus Brady for one, I'd rather have Brady for one playing year to year.
Well, give me another quarterback you could sign with the pedigree of Tom. You can't. 9 Super Bowls, 6 wins, 3 losses.
No one.
That you think you'd have a better chance to take you there.
Yeah. I think there's nobody.
Bridgewater. I mean, obviously, he doesn't have the pedigree.
That doesn't make it give you a better chance to go to the Super Bowl.
I think you've lost your mind on that Jarrett Stidham comment. I really do. I'm going to call you out on that one.
No, that's not. You can't tell me.
I understand the love affair Robert Kraft has for Tom Brady, and it's well deserved. And he's like a son, and he's given him millions of countless dollars over two decades. But you can't tell me that Robert Kraft wouldn't like to hand this team over to his son with a solid Jarrett Stidham 24-year-old or whatever he is, leading this team to a Super Bowl and setting themselves up for financial prosperity and full stadiums and massive amounts of merchandise for the next 10 years.
I think first of all, that's not happening with Stidham, too. I think
if I'm Robert Kraft,
I will pick my own quarterback and my own things, okay? I don't need my—look, thank you, Dad. I'll take it from here. I'll let you know who the new coach after Belichick's going to be. I'll tell you who's going to be involved with the organization. I'm calling the shots once everybody steps on down. I don't need you to set everything up for me with a quarterback that's going to be around 10 years. Well, I got it in control, Dad. Don't worry about it.
Believe me, as a Patriots fan, if you're telling me Jarrett Stidham leads this team to the playoffs next year, I'm all in, because that sets up the future. And right now, the future is very, very murky for this team for the first time in ages.
I just think the money is going to be an issue. And I know a lot of people have said it's not. Giardi says it is. Tom Curran says it's about respect and principle more so than actual dollars. Whatever you call it, the money is going to be a sticking point. I don't think it's as simple as, we'll give you 1 year for $24.5 million and that's it. I don't believe that it's that simple. If Brady wants $32 million, there's going to be a second conversation. If the Patriots say, we'll give you 1 year at $23 million, there's going to have to be a second conversation. I don't think it's going to be as simple and harmonious as everybody seems to think that it is. You're always the one telling me that you can figure out a way to do anything.
That's what I'm thinking. Can they say, we'll give you $10 million this year, and then when you retire, we got something else coming for you? I don't know.
I'm not a specialist on this. They can give you, convert it to a signing bonus, but then that makes more money guaranteed.
Right. I was like, how many times do we hear people saying they rearranged their contract to make it more team-friendly? Well, do something team-friendly then. I'm sure there's ways to get him on the team, still pay him the money, and make it team-friendly for him.
Jack up the guaranteed amount. I mean, it's not like he hasn't earned it if it helps the cap.
There's guys much smarter than me that are their bean counters figuring out exactly how to make this team-friendly and give Tom his money.
There's people smarter than you.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that. Can you believe that? Crowd that he says, make Brady a partial owner. Pay him in equity, not cash.
That's illegal.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But funny part is, if you made Giselle part owner, that's not illegal. No, I'm not kidding around.
Lord knows she could afford the whole team.
If Tom Brady's son, any of them were part owner, that would not be illegal either. So, you know, there's ways around everything.
I wonder if Robert Kraft puts Tom Brady in his will. And I'm not joking about that.
He may.
He's made him a very rich man.
He may. 802-655-6672. If you want to jump in, figure out what the Patriots were worth back when they were going to get booted out of here and what they're worth now. And tell me about that.
Staggering.
4 minute football fix. That's next. You're in the huddle. 101.3 The Game.
The latest NFL headlines.
We got to be better on third downs. We got to stay on the field.
A huge emphasis for us to make sure rush, pressure, the whole thing, that we could affect the quarterback.
Got our hands on some balls, so that was good too.
And it's just, you know, making sure fundamentally we're sound in all aspects of the game.
This is your home for the gridiron.
101.3 The Game.
All right, good evening, everyone. You're in the huddle, 101.3 The Game. Brady, let's get to the four-minute football fix before last story, Sandy.
Well, the XFL has come out with some of their oddities, some of their interesting rules that will differentiate it from the NFL. So I'll run down the list here.
All
so
right.
they haven't completely explained all of them, but punt and kick rules that encourage returns.
I wonder if they'll tell guys they can't leave the line of scrimmage till you count five Mississippi or something.
I think in Canadian football, if you don't run back the kick or if you don't run it back from the end zone, you get the other team gets a point. Is that the way it works? Mm-hmm. So is that what they're talking about?
I have no idea because I haven't seen exactly what this is. I don't want to see people in a position to get injured. That's what we saw the first time the XFL came around. Remember, there instead of the opening kickoff or the coin toss, there was you going to sprint out and dive on the football at midfield or whatever.
It's like a giant scrum.
Yeah, I don't want to see people get injured. I'm all for getting more action in the game and getting people to the opportunity that you can score a touchdown or something, but I don't want to see people unnecessarily having to take the ball out to get injured.
I have to see how that's going to be written in, but I think the Canadian Football League does that. What other rules they have?
No extra point option. So you have to either go for, there will be varying options for 1, 2, or 3 point tries.
I love it.
You cannot, I don't know, I'm speculating, but maybe you get 1 point from
the 5,
getting
10,
from the
15,
two, or, you know, maybe the 2, 5, and 10.
That's
or maybe,
not a bad idea.
I think it's great because your team is never out of it. It's like the 3 point shot.
Well, maybe the NFL should adopt that because if we're not going to do onside kicks anymore or kickoffs, that could be a way to get back in the game, you know, by going for 3 points after a touchdown.
Well, I saw an interesting comment. When the XFL invariably folds, which one of these will the NFL be stealing?
That's not a bad one.
Fewer timeouts. I hate that.
There's three. It's not that bad.
I'll watch now.
And by the way, we need the three because you have to do a challenge, and we want to get them right. I'm okay with the three.
You need the three timeouts, especially because the XFL is going to be lower-level football. You really want guys that are unprepared out there.
No, I want a game to be done in less than 4 hours.
I would also like a game to be played well, right? So they're going to go 1 foot in equals a catch,
which is college.
I'm fine with that. Again, this is lower level football in a lot of cases.
I'm okay with having lower level rules. I'm okay with that.
The dedicated ball spotting ref. This one is the most interesting to me, where they're going to have a guy whose sole job is to be the guy who spots the ball. I don't know why yet we're not at the point where the microchip can tell, like we can put a microchip on the football that can tell us where the ball should be spotted, but the variabilities in spotting the ball is one of the most frustrating things that you get as a fan.
Especially on 3rd and inches.
What you do before the play, you dip the football in something yellow, so when the ball hits the ground, you know exactly where it is.
Sure, the player's covered in yellow. Yeah, I appreciate that.
The overtime, they're going to do shootout overtime from the 5-yard line.
What does shootout mean?
Well, basically, I get the ball at the 5, just like in hockey. I get the ball at the 5. If I score, you have to match it.
Oh, and
if
so it's one play.
Just one play. Oh, okay.
Wow. So it just keeps going like
so
in hockey.
So back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah. So
maybe.
Hockey, you get
3 chances.
You get 3, so then we do the same thing. And then if I score 2 and you score 1, I've won. And if we're even, we keep going.
Okay. That's was the first one. That's not bad. That's not bad
and
at
then,
all.
This one I don't even understand. You get 2 forward passes behind the line of scrimmage you're allowed to do.
That means if you're throwing a screen pass, you know, usually you throw it behind you if you want the second pass, they'll allow you to throw it forward to the running back who can throw it downfield again, as long as it's behind the line of scrimmage.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So more...
I don't think I like that because then you really don't know what that guy is going to do.
So more trick plays.
Yeah, that's very trickery because... Usually when you want to do the double throw, you throw it to the running back who's behind you.
Right.
He has to be behind you, then he can throw it down there. Again, you can't do it the other way around.
Out of those, I mean, what do you guys like? I obviously like the fewer timeouts, but I know you disagree with me. But the 1, 2, or 3 point tries are kind of cool.
That's interesting
to
me.
I like that one, yeah.
And the dedicated ball spotting ref, because that's the one I could see the NFL actually adopting if this worked. You ready for Last Story Standing?
Let's do it. Last Story Standing.
Brought to you by
Wacky. Well, you got to play that first.
Or insightful. We've saved the best for last. It's time for Last Story Standing.
Right.
On the Huddle on 101.3, The Game.
No music, so just go.
All right, Last Story Standing powered by VTEL Wireless, voted the fastest internet provider in Vermont with internet plans starting at $10 per month with no contract required. VTELWireless.com. This is one of the weirdest stories I think I've come up for Last Story Standing. A woman with a rare medical condition says she spends about $10,500 on Johnson's baby powder.
Okay.
Now, you're thinking, well, what is she covering herself? Maybe covering a rash or something like that.
Right.
No, she eats the baby powder.
Ugh.
Lisa Anderson, 44, has a rare problem. She has something, and she wants, for some reason, when she was 29 years old, she started eating baby powder, and she liked it. It says it has a nice soapy taste. She can't get through a 200-gram. She can get through a 200-gram bottle a day.
Does this help her condition? Did the doctor say to do this?
No, the condition is that she can't stop eating.
Oh, this is like My Strange Obsession. Yeah, that's a TV show.
Oh, she'll be famous in about a week.
She goes, I had this sudden urge to eat it. I just couldn't fight it.
Oh, God. This is disgusting. This isn't funny.
Sure it is. It's because it's so absurd.
But that would make your mouth dry, wouldn't it?
You think?
Yeah, I do think.
But it'd be awfully clean.
Maybe that'll be the next fantasy football punishment instead of waffle eating.
And this other story I saw, I was thinking about you, Brady. I mean, this isn't funny either, but a girl went to the dentist to get some cavities filled and her mouth caught on fire.
Oh, fun.
That's funny.
See, you can't go to a dentist like that. That's not a good thing.
No. But hey, I can say that the people who have been doing my dentist work have been awesome. And maybe if I keep talking them up, they'll advertise.
Let's hope they had the water spray right there. Shoot it right into her.
No, but the mouth caught on fire.
Fun.
From the anesthesia or whatever. So glad that didn't happen to you. That could have been pretty damaging.
At least not yet.
Yeah.
I, too, am very happy that that didn't happen to me. Thank you.
Yeah, so, she's going to have to sue that her mouth.
You think?
What do we got on radio today?
Oh, we got a busy night. Stony Brook UVM men's basketball. Huge showdown to open America East play. 6:30. The pregame's a half hour away here on this station.
Oh, nice.
The Spurs are at the Garden to take on the Celtics on 960 The Zone. That's a 6:30 pregame show. And over on WVMT, UVM is at Stony Brook. We'll have that game with the pregame show starting in about 5 minutes.
I'm a little worried about that Stony Brook game tonight.
Spread is 9. I think I like the Seawolves in that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a closer game. I thought it was going to be like within like 4 or 5 point game. I didn't expect the blowout. What kind of how many interns do we have today?
Intern Danny. Crushing it every day like he always does.
He's the only intern we have for quite a
while. Well, it's because the kids aren't back from school yet. Danny lives in town.
Oh, well. I still think he's slacking it. So, everybody, enjoy the game. Have fun. We'll be back tomorrow. Lots going on tonight, so we will see ya.